Good afternoon. We'll call the meeting of the Transportation Policy and Finance Committee to order. Representative Sanders, do you have a chance to review the minutes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move the minutes from April 9th.
April 9th. Representative Sanders moves the minutes of April 9th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. That motion prevails. All right. Well, welcome members and members of the audience here today to review and mark up House File 4. Just a quick update. In the Ways and Means, there was a budget resolution change, so our targets are lined up this morning, so we did get that taken care of. We are going to walk through a number of amendments today from both sides. And what we're going to do, a number of these have certainly already been discussed, so we're not going to hear a lot of testimony unless we ask someone to come down for technical questions. We do have our committee time as we're starting a little bit early. We have this room till 3:15. We also have this room at 6:30 if we would all like to, in the basement, or in the basement actually, if we would like to come back and continue our conversations at 6:30. I'm sure we can go till midnight there, so nobody's behind us.
There'll be no holds barred if we come back.
There you go. So that is our plan for today. And let's see, with that, what's our first our list? Okay. The first amendment we're going to offer is the A20 amendment, and I will offer that A20 amendment before the committee. That has to do with removing Article 3 to make sure all of the dollars go through the tax committee. And I'll let Mr. Burris to walk through that, please.
Mr. Chair and members, the A20 author's amendment contains a couple of substantive provisions and then some technical and clarifying conforming changes. The main substantive provision is on page 1, line 23, and that is the deletion of Article 3 of the DE2 amendment. This amendment, along with all the others in your packet, is written against the DE2, so that would be the base document that the committee had adopted in the previous hearing. So Article 3 contains a couple of the tax provisions where some of the lease revenue, sales tax on auto parts, and a couple of sales taxes on motor vehicle rentals are allocated to transportation purposes. That article also contains a couple of provisions on the county's transit improvement board. The A20 amendment also includes a contingent reduction in appropriations in the event that the tax committee or the taxes bill or a similar bill would not be enacted in this legislative session, containing all the revenue reallocations to transportation. And then finally, there are a couple of effective date and clarifying provisions so that accounts get created at the same time as transfers into the accounts, and a couple of provisions are clarified as far as what dates apply, and a conforming change to go along with the removal of the sales taxes.
Any questions on the A20 amendment? Representative Hornstein.
Just a quick point, Mr. Chair. I know this is more of a procedural matter before us, but, you know, just on principle again, I mean, this is taking general fund money without dedication to transportation, and, you know, I have some concerns about that. So just on principle, I'll be voting no, but I do understand this is more of a procedural matter to get it to the tax committee.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Other questions? All right, with that, all those in favor of the A20 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay?
No.
The motion prevails. A20 amendment is approved. Now we will move to the A37 amendment. And we do have a couple of testifiers here because this is a little bit different than what we've talked about, but in regards to emergency response teams. Representative Neuberger, who's going to offer this amendment? Representative Uglem, would you like to offer the 37 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer that amendment.
37?
It's the 837. Don't have it. Yeah, it's here. Is there anyone else who does not have the 837 amendment? Not sure why we've missed some. There, we do have.
I just found it.
Okay, thank you.
I thought it was out of order.
Okay.
Numerical order.
Okay. Okay. Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm very happy to sit before you today to offer this amendment. It takes a big step in being proactive towards the rail safety issue. What this amendment does is it funds two emergency response teams. It's $450,000 for each city for the biennium. One would be in St. Cloud. It is a big population center that's bisected by a rail line that is real busy with Bakken Oil trains. I spoke to the department chief, and they have been meeting, having meetings over the past few days to try to make this work, and they said absolutely that they can do this. I think this is a critical place to put this because right now our only two emergency response teams that we currently have for rail disasters is St. Paul and Moorhead, and there's a whole lot of miles between the two cities. St. Cloud tries to cut the difference a little bit there and gives central Minnesota some more safety. Also, we also have Duluth here as well. That's also a big population center with a lot of rail traffic, and Representative Simonson is here to attest to that. We're just really excited that we've got a bipartisan effort here to really address this safety concern for everyone involved.
Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and I just want to thank Representative Neuberger for his efforts on carrying this issue forward in the form of an amendment. I know that he's worked on this for the last couple of years with me, along with Representative Hornstein and a few others, trying to bring attention to what this really is, a serious issue. Duluth, I know I can speak to, used to be an emergency response team. When these teams were first put together, we had a series of emergency response teams, which are larger, more trained, more equipment teams spread out across the state, and then a number of smaller chemical assessment teams that were spread out sort of in between. At one point in time, with budget reductions, we were reduced by the state to a chemical assessment team, which is what we currently are, but this appropriation would allow us to build back up to that emergency response team level and then provide that service to essentially all of northeastern Minnesota. Our response district at one time covered all the way down to Pine City, actually. So I just appreciate the opportunity to come and testify today, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Representative Simonson. Given the proximity of the rail traffic in Duluth in relationship to the rail traffic in Superior, Wisconsin, where a lot of this volatile oil is being delivered, I'm just wondering, are there cooperative agreements between the emergency response teams in Wisconsin and Minnesota? Is there any kind of a relationship there?
Representative Simonson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Sundin, yes, there is. We do have a mutual aid agreement with the City of Superior as well as the Township of Superior, so in the event of something happening across the bridge, we certainly respond back and forth for each other.
Mr. Chair, if I can follow up, please.
Representative Sundin.
What do they have in place over in Wisconsin?
Mr. Chair, Representative Sundin, they have an emergency response team that's similar. It's not located in the City of Superior. It would come from central Wisconsin in the event of an incident, you know, in Superior, either in the city proper or in the port.
Representative Sundin.
Is it proper to assume then that this measure would provide a lot of security for both cities and the Port of Duluth?
Mr. Chair and Representative Sundin, that is correct. We work very closely with the City of Superior in terms of sharing services. So, yes, to answer your question, it would go a long ways towards that effort.
Great. Any other questions from members? Representative Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make a point just before we vote on this. I'm going to reluctantly support this. The reluctance is not for the restoration of these ERTs. We need these. And I really appreciate all the work that both of you have done in supporting our rail safety initiatives and your professional careers in serving the people in public safety. And so I do support what you're doing here. The concern is that when we reinstated the Moorhead ERT last year, that was from a statutory appropriation that came from the assessment that we had on railroad and pipeline companies. And so I'm very uncomfortable with the fact that we're taking this from the vehicle services operating account. I intend, Mr. Chair, to do a little bit of research and perhaps with our colleagues here to see, you know, what is the fund balance from that appropriation, and perhaps some of that money can be directed to this purpose. You know, we are in ongoing conversations with the railroad companies about assessments. I think they should properly be supporting this rather than taking money from the vehicle services operating account, which we have tended to raid bipartisanly in the past for numbers of for things in the past. So I'm supporting this because I support what you're doing for public safety. We have to have a better way to fund it. I'd prefer that it be funded by the railroads. So with that, Mr. Chair, I just hope we can continue to work through this as this wends its way through the process.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. And possibly Mr. Lee would have a comment on the actual fund.
Mr. Chair and members, I do not know the current fund balance of the Special Revenue Fund for Oil and Pipeline Safety, but I can speak to the Driver and Vehicle Services Fund. This would allocate about $900,000 over the 2 years from the Vehicle Services account. After all of the other spending in this bill and Governor's Recs, there would be about $1.9 million left, and after this amendment, there would be about $1 million left in that account.
Any other questions from members?
Well, Mr. Chair, so that just speaks to my concern here, and so, you know, I know we're going to Ways and Means Thursday, so maybe we can fix this up a little before then.
Right. Seeing no further questions, Representative Uglem renews his motion for the A 37 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Why don't we go to the A3? We have the A3 amendment, Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment regards the county state aid highway portion of state highway funds. And basically it's saying that given there was an agreement with all counties back in 2008 for any excess monies that would be distributed based on the formula, that new formula for the excess money would be distributed based on a 68-32 ratio. And so we are simply saying that any new monies in this bill then would also be distributed on that ratio, in that ratio.
Representative Runbeck moves the A3 amendment.
Then. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there any questions on the A3 amendment? Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since I'm not supporting any of Representative Runbeck's other amendments, I do support this one. So,
Mr. Chair.
It doesn't get, I think, to the kind of equity we really need, but it moves us in the right direction. So,
thank you. Any other questions of Representative Runbeck? Representative Johnson.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I would like to see just a better explanation of what does
what does this mean? You know, I think we all at this table, what does this mean for our district? What does this mean for, does this have any significant impact on funding for Blue Earth County, for example?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, what I can tell you is that all counties were in agreement with this accord that was reached in 2008. So basically saying that there's sort of two formulas for the CASA type money, and one is called the apportionment method, and that was anything before 2008, and essentially after that it's called the excess apportionment, and that's for new monies that have come into the account more or less since then. So it was an agreed upon a consensus.
Representative Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm understanding this basically continues what's been going on since 2008.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Any other questions from members? Representative Runbeck renews her motion, the A3 and the A3 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. That motion prevails. Members, the A5 amendment is now actually taken care of by the A31 amendment, so that will be one change. We'll move to the A31 amendment, and moving that. Representative Howe? Representative Howe to the A31 amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A31 amendment. And this amendment, this was actually heard in a Representative Hackbarth bill, and it's been tweaked a little bit to add some clarity to it. So what it does now is it provides life insurance cover or health insurance coverage to a volunteer firefighter that gets killed in the line of duty, but it clarifies it to the point where it provides the coverage to a spousal dependent to the age of 65 and to other dependent coverage until 26. So it provides some clarity there, so it's not providing health coverage to all the dependents till 65. So it clarifies it a little bit, and so I move that amendment.
Okay. Any questions of the 831 amendment? I think you have the someone here in regards to that, if there are any other additional questions. All right. Not Representative Howe renews moves Amendment 831. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. That motion prevails. Is McNair here yet? Okay. Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll move the A8 amendment. And as a heads up to Mr. Lee, I'm going to ask him shortly how much the total amount of shifts are in the bill. So while he's busily pulling out some paperwork, I think I heard, Mr. Chair, if it's all right, I might ask Representative Norton to yield. I think I heard the number right, but there was, did you go through the bill and count the number of shifts? And I'm trying to remember, I thought it was like 17 shifts total or something like that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At the time, I counted 46 and I recounted at 47 and I needed someone to check my math, but it's either 46 or 47 shifts.
Mr. Chair, I think we're up to 48 with that last amendment we did on the Department of Public Safety.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Horton. It actually makes my point three times greater than I had thought. Excuse me. And what the amendment does is it takes out the shifts. We talk about wanting to budget the way we do our family budgets and so forth, Mr. Chairman, and I understand you were charged a difficult task. but when we look at this, the lion's share, if not virtually everything, is shifts. So, Mr. Lee, perhaps, did I give you enough time?
Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair and members, just a moment. I'm looking through my files here.
Well, I'll tell you, as long as What I've got in the current amendment are the excuse me, by the way, the shifts for the aviation support services base, the transit base, the freight base, the electronic communications base, the agency management and agency services base, the buildings base, the administrative related services base, public safety support base, and the technology and support services base. Those shifts alone are in the neighborhood of about $60 million, slightly over $60 million. Then there's the shifts from DVS and vehicle services, the snow and ice shift, and four existing general fund stream shifts for auto parts, the 6.5% rental car tax, 9.2% additional rental car tax, and the motor vehicle lease sales tax shift. In fact, Mr. Chair, what I realized as we were drafting, there's so many shifts that we actually left a few of them out. And if I might, whether you'd be appropriate with me orally incorporating those additional shifts from DVS, snow and ice, and then the four existing general fund shifts. Is that all right, Mr. Chair, if I just incorporate those shifts into the amendment?
Absolutely, Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All told, and my math, Mr. Lee, was over $700 million in shifts. Are you getting, when we take in the, and what I've got here is the auto parts sales tax is $384 million. Rental car sales was $35 million. Another rental car sales tax was $39 million. Motor vehicle sales tax lease is $14 million. And then $228 million more from the general fund, plus all of these shifts. Am I in the ballpark, Mr. Lee?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and members, I believe you are. I'll just walk through the different components very briefly. The auto parts over the 16-17 biennium is $384 million. The lease sales tax changes are $27.8 million. And the rental changes are about $20 million for the 6.5%. And about, I believe, $35 million for the 9.2% dedication. And then there, where it gets a little bit complicated, is with the fiscal 18-19 moving the trunk highway funded components of MnDOT and DPS over to the general fund is a the order of about $80 million a year in additional general fund cost.
Thank you, Mr. Lee, and thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Chair, what I would request is a roll call with respect to undoing the 48 shifts, resulting in something in the neighborhood of about $700 million that seems to be the driving force behind this bill. This isn't what we promised to folks when we campaign in the fall, when we talk about doing things like a family budget. So what this does is it undoes the shifts, undoes the $700 odd million that fund this. And I'd ask for a roll call, Mr. Chairman, and thank you.
A roll call has been requested. Are there any questions of Representative Atkins?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Earhart.
Would he read the list of things by the oral amendment? I missed that part that you're also including.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Earhart, the additions, in addition to what's on the current amendment, are the four existing general fund revenue stream shifts from auto parts, 6.5% rental car tax. There's also an additional 9.2% rental car tax, the motor vehicle sales tax, the snow and ice shift, and the shift from DVS, from the vehicle services operating account.
Representative Earhart?
That's good. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? The A8 amendment. Roll call.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just quickly wanted to support Representative Atkins' amendment. And I think what he's getting at is, I think, the entire sense that this bill is built on a bit of a house of cards. You know, we have all of these shifts. We're taking money from one pot to another, and it's created quite a we have all these different now amendments. because people are trying to fix things and shift things more. So I think with this amendment, when we adopted it, it'll help us start from scratch and maybe develop a little bit more of a bill with dedicated funding that we're not taking from education and healthcare and nursing homes, et cetera, to provide the transportation needs that we have in the state. So with that, I would thank Representative Atkins for pointing out the House of Cards nature of this bill and would ask for a yes vote.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Note on protocol here. When you take a roll call vote, do you get a chance to explain your vote then, or do you have to explain it now before we start the vote?
Well, once the roll call has been taken, Representative Earhart, we'll be moving on to the next amendment. So if you want to explain your vote now, it would probably be the best time.
Well, before I vote, though, it would be on the roll call. That's why I was asking, Mr. Chairman.
Right.
All right. Well, I will tell you that I am going to vote against the amendment because I'm on record as saying it's time we begin to look at general fund money, and I've produced a bill to that occasion, and so right now my inclination is to vote no on the Atkins amendment.
Thank you, Representative Earhart. And just as a point of comment as well, we have been tasked with an important one, and as we've as this debate has gone on throughout the last year and many years before that, we've been asked to prioritize transportation, and in that regard, this bill has done exactly that. We can talk about shifts and changes from what we have done in the past, and that's probably why we are here, because we've always done it the same way, and that's what's gotten us into trouble. So what we've been working on and trying to get to is to put a plan together that not only addresses our needs right now, but also prioritize those and dedicates funds to a long-term plan that spends $7 billion. So we are looking forward to continuing this bill in the process, and in that regard, Representative Earhart will be joining you as well. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I really appreciate what you just said, and I certainly understand where Representative Earhart is coming from, and I could join you if we weren't using $2 billion of the money that we have available to us in tax credits, and if we were taking that money in the other parts of the budget that funded education and K-12 and some of those other areas like jobs, the jobs bill is not even keeping up with the things that we funded last year, and K-12 is looking at a very tiny increase. My district's going out for a referendum. I think I mentioned that the other day. So I actually could support what we're doing here if the other part of the budget were prioritizing that surplus, if you will, in those areas that were important, but they're not. So I'm looking at this bill not just in the context of the bill, but in the context of the larger budget proposal coming forward, and it just does too much damage in those other areas because we're not using the surplus in a way that I think is very responsible. So just thought I would add that.
Thank you. Any other comments by members? All right, with that, a roll call has been requested on the A8 amendment. Our committee assistant will take the roll.
Chair Kelly?
No.
Representative Petersburg?
No.
Representative Anderson? Representative Atkins?
Yes.
Representative Bernardi?
Yes.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Earhart?
No.
Representative Hausman?
Yes.
Representative Hornstein?
Yes.
Representative Howe?
Negative.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick?
No.
Representative Lucero? Representative Mason?
Yes.
Representative McNamara?
No.
Representative Nash?
No.
Representative Norton?
Yes.
Representative Runbeck?
No.
Representative Sanders?
No.
Representative Sundin?
Yes.
Representative Uglem?
No.
Representative Whalen?
No.
The roll call being taken, and there being 8 ayes and 12 noes, the motion does not prevail.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Members, we'll move to the A1 amendment now. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment deals with the concrete diamond grinding slurry that when you're doing highway grinding. We had reached an agreement 4 years ago with MnDOT and the environmental folks on moving forward, and this amendment deals with what was the intent of that legislation that hasn't completely taken place yet. So that's basically what the amendment is, Mr. Chair.
Are there any questions from members? Okay. Scott? Mr. Peterson? Let's see a couple comments. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott Peterson from MnDOT. Just briefly, the department is concerned about the provision in this bill, particularly on line 1-7, where it requires the department to reach agreement with interested representatives about the study. Just for background for the members, MnDOT is just entering into a research project, $130,000, to study the impact of disposal of concrete grinding slurry on the inslopes of highways, which, as Representative McNamara referenced, was something that we agreed with the industry to do 3 years ago. We have no opposition to consulting with the industry. In fact, the industry is currently on our technical advisory panel for the study itself. We try to work collaboratively with the industry. I'm not involved in that business, so I don't know how well that's going. But I think that we share the industry's concern in finding the most cost-effective way to deal with the waste product from this diamond grinding activity, because it's a very good process for us. It really extends the life of our concrete roadways. The reason we'd like to find out as much as we can about the impact of this method of disposal is because the inslopes of our highways are part of the drainage system for our highways, so they are critical for hauling or allowing runoff to flow away from the roadbed. And the roadbed itself, it protects the roadbed, and that is a very, it's an engineered part of the road structure. So the inslope itself and the vegetation on it, preventing erosion, and protecting the soil structure that's underneath the pavement is very important. And so the intent of the study is just to, in a controlled environment, determine what, if any, impacts there are of disposing of the slurry, to look at all the information that's available on similar research that's been done in other states and see what we can learn.
Thank you. Representative McNamara?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like the amendment, and I'm willing to work with the department and see if we want to tweak a couple words. There's been, unfortunately, still some examples of where maybe feet have been being dragged a little bit, and so I'm willing to work with the department and find a solution, and I agree to study it in case there's some implications we're not aware of. But I would like to adopt the amendment, Mr. Chair. I think it's a good amendment.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Peterson, are we talking about huge mounds, truckloads of stuff, or are we talking about a little powder on the side of the road? What is the enormity of this problem?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, my understanding is that the waste product from this operation comes out the end of a good-sized hose. I don't know the exact dimensions, but maybe somewhere in the order of 3 inches or 4 inches. Again, I don't know exactly what it is, but it comes out with enough velocity to create erosion at the point of discharge, for example. I don't know that it does, but that's what I know. And so they, for example, looked at different ways to diffuse the product and that comes out of the hose in order to minimize that impact and distribute it more. I think again, my knowledge is not very extensive on this particular tactic, but you know, the grinder moves along the roadway and it drags the pipe and deposits the byproduct on the side of the road. I don't think that it's an enormous amount. It's relatively high pH. It is higher pH than most plants like to survive in. After it gets in the soil, you know, I don't think that there's any chemical reaction that damages it. We don't do that grinding operation, you know, very often. I think, which just again, it's just a matter of making sure that we understand the impacts of the operation.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, and maybe a question for the author. I noted that in the seven lines you have four times there's either consult or consultant. And so has there been a lack of communication between the industry and MnDOT? It seems like you're really getting at some kind of an issue where maybe one side or the other hasn't been in proper communication. It seems like that's one of the gists of your amendment.
Has that
been happening?
Yes.
Any other questions for members? Representative McNamara renews his motion that the A1 amendment be moved. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay?
No.
Motion prevails. Amendment is approved. Representative Hornstein, A6 amendment.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Chair. And just before we get to this, and I'll ask counsel for the appropriate motion, but I did not, it was not my intention to have Section 30 deleted here. That's the part of the bill that deals with porta potties. I've been in support of that, Representative McNamara, and continue to be.
Thank goodness.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, it sounds like then you would like to orally amend the amendment to read pages 45 to 46, delete sections 27 to 29.
Yeah, that would be my motion, Mr. Chair, to orally amend my amendment.
Okay. Representative Hornstein moves to orally amend line 1.3 to state pages 45 to 46. Delete sections 27 to 29. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay? Okay, that motion prevails. Representative Hornstein,
thank
to
you,
your amendment.
Mr. Chair, and we've had hours of testimony in this committee on this, so I'm simply moving forward this amendment because I think the jury is still out on this, and we've got experts on both sides that, including the public sector, that are somewhat split on this question, although there is quite a bit of public sector research through USDOT that should give us caution on this. But testimony previously, I believe, in the first hearing we had on this, there was significant testimony about an upcoming federal study that we're waiting for that I think will be far more definitive than what we've had in the past on truck weights. So I'm just saying we ought to be cautious about this and wait for that final study before we adopt this. So that's the rationale, and again, we've had a lot of testimony. I don't want to redo those hearings, but would just simply ask for the committee's support on that.
Thank you. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just I'll be quick about this, but I really do need to know maybe from the department about the timeline on that federal study that everybody's holding their breath waiting for. Can we hear a couple words on that from the department?
Mr. Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott Peterson from MnDOT again. That study, the report was scheduled to be released last fall, and it's still not out. I don't know that there's any specific timeline right now for releasing the final results.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier, is there any other are there any other sources of information? So other states that with similar road construction techniques and conditions that we deal with, here in Minnesota. Is there any other information or sources of?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sundin, I am not aware of any studies that are looking at the same types of topics that the federal study is looking at or that the MnDOT study looked at. What I have seen is some studies that looked at the impact of heavier weights on raising the center of gravity of a truck and how that might lead to more rollovers, but the studies are limited by the amount of available data that applies specifically to that situation. So, you know, I don't think that they, and they acknowledge that they don't reach a statistically significant conclusion, but call for more study and raise concerns about that possibility.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to support Representative Hornstein's efforts here, partly because I've heard from all my law enforcement and county folks that they don't like this particular provision. But also, and we had some discussion about this in committee, so I won't go on much, but having to do with enforcement, these trucks that we're talking about are going to be holding, as we heard in committee, a variety of projects because we've expanded the number of products that can be in there. And those products, the end source for most of those products is off of these main roads. And so a lot of the discussion I heard had to do with posting. They can't go on roads that aren't posted, but the roads they're going to have to go down to get to their product are going to be posted for no weight or are not going to be built strong enough to hold these weights. So while, you know, maybe the jury is out or still confused about the main highways and roads, I think some of the roads, as described in the bill for the products they're going to be carrying, are going to force them to be on roads that are posted. And unless we're going to have enforcement on all the bridges and the roads, we're going to have violations, and it's going to tear up our roads. So I'm concerned for that reason. I would support Representative Hornstein's efforts here.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions from members? Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just don't like making decisions in this dim light of information that we're dealing with. So those roads will be there in a couple of years. This issue will be there in a couple of years. The trucks will be there. And until we get better information, I'd just as soon wait on any alterations to the truck weights.
Seeing no other questions or comments from members, Representative Hornstein renews. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to make a comment that most of the people that seem to be opposed to the increasing the truck weights, it's a fairly broad portion of our communities. The main reason for allowing this seems to be on the issue of saving money. And I guess at this point, I would rather err on public safety as the main issue rather than on just saving some money. And especially when I believe law enforcement is against this as well.
Thank you. Any further questions or comments? With that, Representative Hornstein renews his motion to move the A6 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed nay?
Nay.
No.
The motion does not prevail and the amendment is not approved. We're not doing the 810. Is Abigail ready for the 11? Or are we going to Petersburg? We're going to 11. We'll move to the A11 amendment. Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A11 amendment, which will transfer money from the vehicle services operating account into the Minnesota Grade Safety Crossing account.
Representative Whalen moves the A11 amendment. Questions, comments? Representative Hornstein.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, you know, on this one, you know, now here's yet another raid on the vehicle services account. On this one, it's a little different than the previous one because we have some ongoing related to rail safety. We have an ongoing process. We heard the bill that I am putting forward on an assessment for grade crossings. And, Mr. Chair, again, I want to thank you for hearing that bill.
we're now in discussions with the railroads about how to pay for that. And obviously, anything we do here is not mutually exclusive. Obviously, we're discussing with the railroads. We can legislate. I'm not suggesting that we wait for any kind of conclusion. I'm not terribly optimistic, but obviously, you know, we hope to arrive at a number somewhere between $1 and $32 million that the railroads can pay for this. But on this one, I would rather that the money come from an assessment from the railroads. I think $5 million we're looking, I think. Mr. Chair, I do have a question for the author, perhaps, before I suggest this oral amendment.
All right.
Do you envision this, Representative Whalen, as a one-time expenditure, or is this $5 million ongoing for a certain amount of time?
Thank you, Representative Hornstein, for the question. At this time, I guess I would have envisioned it as one time, but I'm open to a discussion on that at maybe offline.
Okay.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. That's very helpful. So what I think we could do then, rather than talking about a specific timeline, annual assessment, et cetera, I would just simply strike, if I could do a very short oral amendment, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
If I could strike, instead of strike from the vehicle services operating account on line 11, and in the special revenue fund, I suppose we would add that. And substitute $5 million. Well, you would also delete transfer. And then there'd be $5 million from an assessment on Class One railroads. I think Mr. Burris may know my intention here, and if there's some language I'm not including that he could dress this up with, we could hear from him. Say maybe allocate instead of transfer.
Mr. Lee. Mr. Chair and members, just as a point of clarification on the A11 amendment, it does not take more money from the vehicle services account. Rather, it moves money that was appropriated in the DE2 amendment for the Mercy program for rail improvement that was funded in the freight office, and instead uses it for grade crossing safety. So it's not additional funds that's going away from that. So the net effect of the amendment before the oral amendment would basically be a net zero in terms of the vehicle services account. It just reprioritizes, essentially.
Okay. I guess, Mr. Chair, I would like to know the impact of this on the Mercy Fund and what we would be losing by doing this. I don't know if there's someone from MnDOT that could testify to that.
Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Do you have an answer for us?
Good. Representative Hornstein, please repeat the question.
Representative Hornstein.
Apparently, this is not coming from the vehicle services operating account, but it's coming from the Mercy. It is, but it's from the dedicated to the Mercy Fund.
Correct.
I guess what would be the impact on that by taking $5 million from that fund? What would we be compromising or losing by doing that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hornstein, the Mercy Fund is...
Mr. Peterson, excuse me, for clarification, though, just so we know, Representative Hornstein, we would not be taking dollars from the Mercy Fund. These are dollars that were to go there, but now is not. So there's not funds being taken from the Mercy
Fund. Thank you for that clarification. Yep. What might be some examples of things that might not get funded if we do this amendment?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hornstein. So the Mercy Fund is a fund that provides loans and occasionally grants to basically small regional railroads and shippers. And so its intention is to be a revolving loan fund, basically, that improves freight rail service along these short line railroads. And so the impact of the amendment would be to reduce the amount available for those types of investments by $5 million.
Mr. Peterson, is it true that with interest rates the way they are, that this fund has not been utilized very much in the last several years?
Mr. Chairman, I don't really have that information available. I do know that one railroad in particular has, the Minnesota Valley Regional Rail has gotten a fair amount of investment through the legislature for improving their railroad, but I don't know if that actually came through the Mercy Fund or not. But most of it was directly appropriated. So,
thank you. Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to speak to the amendment a little bit. I think this represents just a small first step in terms of safety for rail crossings. And I believe there's much more that needs to be done. This is just a reallocation of resources into something right now that obviously is right in the crosshairs in terms of our rail crossings. So I think it's well intentioned. It's a good first step. We need to do more.
Okay, Representative Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd like to, Representative Hornstein, can you remember what did we appropriate last year for rail crossings?
Yes.
Was it something like $2 million?
Yes.
And do you know where those funds came from?
Representative Hornstein?
Mr. Chair, Representative Howe, that was $2 million from the general fund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is quite a bit more than what we appropriated last year.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, quite a bit more than last year, but quite a bit less than what we're envisioning for this year.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, and Mr. Chair, and I'm Representative Hornstein as well. I'm not sure if you're still going to offer your oral amendment, but my concern is that since nothing in the bill creates the special assessment, is it maybe premature and maybe out of order? So that's a question that I would ask.
What do we have? You have a comment, Mr. Burris? Representative Hornstein, would you like to proceed with your oral amendment?
Yes, I understand. I'll just make some very quick summary comments here, Mr. Chair, and that is, we're in an ongoing conversation here. I understand, Representative Uglum, I agree with you, and I understand your intention. I don't, and Representative Whalen said I don't question that. I know that you have some issues up in Coon Rapids and Anoka, and we have to figure out a way to come together and ensure that we adequately fund grade crossings and grade separations. And as the chair pointed out, I think there is consensus on that. It is a question of how to pay for it. And so, I feel we're now in a situation where we have a strong position by the governor. We have, I think, the Senate is very interested in a public-private approach to this. And so I'm simply saying, if we're going to be talking about grade crossings, let's start from an assessment and see where we can go from there.
All right. Well, I think we have the oral amendment then. Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair and members, the oral amendment that I just did up based on what you had indicated would be page 1. So this is amending the A1111 amendment. Page 1, delete line 11 and insert assess $5 million in the manner provided under Minnesota statutes, section 219.015, subdivision 2, and deposit the funds in. And then page 1, line 12, delete fund 2. So the assessment would be in the same manner as the current track inspector assessment on railroads. And then the funds would be deposited in the Minnesota grade crossing safety account.
Representative Hornstein, does that meet your needs?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks very much, Mr. Burris, again, for all of your work. And I think what we're doing here is making this consistent with the way that we were raising money from the railroads last year.
Representative Uglum.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question of Representative Hornstein. Didn't you mention Class 1 railroads in your original?
Yes.
So is that in the amendment now?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Uglum, the assessment for rail safety inspectors is on Class 1 and Class 2 railroads only. It would exclude the Class 3s. I believe there's now one Class 2 railroad, but it would go against the Class 1s.
Representative Howell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would we not also have to do something with 1.3 and 1.4? Or am I reading into that too much? I would think that if we're moving those funds in those lines, we'd have to do something to take that out.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Howe, point taken. I think that if Representative Hornstein wants to retain the current funding stream for the Mercy program, then the amendment would also need to read page 1, delete lines 3 to 7.
I'm going to trust Mr. Burris on that, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this kind of points to one of the challenges with the shifts, and sometimes the shifts hit home. And as I'm learning about this, we're shifting money to something that, I think everyone in this room supports, improved grade crossings. But this does have an impact on short line railroads, and the railroad that was identified, I want to remind the committee, has really had a positive history in the last 15 years or so, and has made a difference in South Central Minnesota, in that they are now serving by rail several grain elevators and a fairly substantial ethanol facility in Winthrop. And that railroad struggles to find the capital to develop. It's a slow developer. It's a small railroad, but they're making progress. And what they're doing is they're keeping a lot of trucks off the road by moving grain by rail, and that has impact on the roads in the region and that sort of thing. So I just stand in strong support of Representative Hornstein's amendment to the amendment.
Representative Whelan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hornstein, for your comments and thoughtful, creative solutions to some of our funding questions. At this time, I would just like to urge members to vote no on the oral amendment to the amendment. I have, not having had time to really fully vet the impact this might have, I'm thinking that I would like to maintain the original language. And furthermore, I don't think that it was mentioned, but I just want to point out that we believe we can receive federal matching funds with the amendment. And so I would urge members to vote no. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hornstein.
One very quick comment, again, before we vote. The rationale here, as well as the rationale for the bill that we heard earlier, is that we're dealing with an industry that's highly profitable right now, that is hauling very dangerous materials, particularly this new Bakken crude, the new phenomenon that's just been in our communities the last few years. We're looking at cars that are trains that are 100 cars or longer, with substandard tankers, so we have to leave no stone unturned when it comes to safety. And so I believe, that the railroads need to be partners with us, that this cannot be simply a public expenditure alone. And while we're going to probably be revisiting this issue and talking about it further, I thought at this point, given all the shifting that's gone on already, the previous amendment related to rail safety, this might be a time to just say, no more shifts. Let's do the right thing in terms of asking a very highly profitable industry to share costs with the public sector for rail safety. So that's the rationale with this oral amendment.
Senator Drozdowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hornstein, for bringing forward this amendment to the amendment. It just reminds me that you're batting in true form, Representative Hornstein. We see this. The past majority did it again and again. Instead of setting priorities with the money we have, here we see the Democrats coming with their solution, which is just to raise taxes and make government bigger instead of the common sense approach that Representative Whalen brought with her amendment to properly prioritize the money we have in the areas that are of highest priority. So members, encourage you to vote against the amendment. Thank you, Representative Hornstein, and thank you, Representative Whalen.
One last one, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Representative Drozdowski. And this isn't growing government. This is holding a highly profitable industry accountable so that the taxpayers don't have to continue to subsidize them.
Representative Runbeck.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think it's worth mentioning that we continue to assume that our industries aren't going to do the right thing. And I think that's such a failing. But I think I've heard $500 million from the railroads themselves. I mean, they see the issue, they see the problem, and they're dedicating money to take care of it. So I think that's something we ought to be taking into account.
Thanks. Thank you. Mr. Burris, could you remind us what the oral amendment is?
Mr. Chair and members, the oral amendment would be, again, against the A11 amendment. Page 1, delete lines 3 to 7. Page 1, delete line 11 and insert assess $5 million in the manner provided under Minnesota statutes, section 219.015, subdivision 2, and deposit the funds in. Then page 1, line 12, delete fund 2.
Thank you very much. We'll now vote on that oral amendment as stated. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
The motion does not prevail. The oral amendment is not approved. Any other comments on the A11 amendment?
Representative Hornstein. Mr. Chair, I'll, again, very reluctantly support this. I don't like the fact that we're taking money from the Mercy Fund, but you know, if we can, Mr. Representative Uglem and Representative Whalen, figure out a way to have the railroads at least pay part of this, you know, I'll be in support of this approach. But, you know, right now I have serious concerns about, you know, the way that the path that we're going on here. And I hope that we can work together and figure out a way to share these costs.
Okay. Representative Uglem.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Members, I'd just like to reiterate that I think this is a good first step towards something that we need to act on now. And this is going to be an ongoing situation. The oil in the Bakken is not going away. The trains are not going away. The problems at the on-grade intersections are not going away. This is just the start. In the fact that we can leverage federal funds on this is also very big. So I think it's a good amendment. I urge everybody to vote for it, and I think we can move forward from here.
Thank you. With that, Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll just echo the sentiments of Representative Uglem. I agree it's a good first step and very happy to have further conversations about how this might look in the future. So thank you.
All right. Representative Whalen renews her motion to move the A11 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. That motion prevails. The A11 amendment is approved. We'll move on to the A12 amendment. Representative Uglem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A12 amendment is just a common sense amendment. Perhaps many of you are aware of the recent Star and Tribune article about fares on light rail. Recently, the Met Council was audited on the compliance with their so-called honor system for fare paying on the light rail lines that we have here in the metro area. Losses in fares because people are not paying are in excess of $1.5 million a year. On the Green Line, right out our front door here, 1 in 10 people skip paying fares. 1 in 10. I just was astounded with that. I think we all understand that we would like to have an honor system. We'd like to think that all Minnesotans will pay when they hop on the train or whatever. But the fact is they're not. And the other thing is, I look at this from a management perspective, and I say, MetTransit has over 200 police officers that are supposed to be monitoring this. What are these people doing? They're not doing their job. I'm sorry. And I don't like micromanaging people. I don't like micromanaging agencies or anything like that. But we have a problem. We have $1.5 million in taxpayers' money that we're being cheated out of. Now, Chicago, New York, L.A., and many, many other transit systems in the country all have methods to collect their fares. We do not. We do not. So this amendment simply says that the Met Council will have to collect their fares. You're going to have to pay if you're going to ride. Common sense. And they have a year to come up with whatever method they want to do that with. And if you're collecting $1.5 million more in fares, you're going to have some money to dedicate towards a way of collecting the fares. So that's my amendment. I stand for questions.
Representative Howe.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Representative Uglum, for bringing this forward. I having rode the North Star for a number of years and the light rail, you know, on the North Star, those folks come through and they check it. And I actually witnessed someone that didn't have a paid fare, and they got over $180 ticket. But I rode the light rail, and I will say I not once seen anyone get checked, not once seen anyone get a ticket. And the people climbing on and off that light rail system was quite astounding. Now on the buses, I will tell you, the bus driver checks everyone as they get on. So there's two parts of the transit system that do an excellent job of collecting fares. But the light rail system, run by the same outfit, does not do what the other two parts of that system does. So I'm just amazed that the light rail system does not collect the fares and does not enforce the fares that they collect, or actually the fares that should be collected. So, Representative Uglum, I support this amendment, and it's a high time that we hold their feet to the fire and collect those fares.
Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. So my son attends school at Hamlin, not too far from here, and whenever my son feels the need to come and deprive me of some of my hard-earned cash to help in his activities, he rides the Green Line. And I always make sure that he has a well-stocked ticket to make sure that he gets on and off by paying his fare. But he tells me on a regular basis that there are people who don't. And I'm just shocked. You know, maybe it's a lack of good parenting or whatever, but maybe we have to architect a way around that. And I think that a simple fare collection box is a good way to go, because we're already underwriting the Green Line. And now, to the tune of another $21,000 a week, the report said, we're not collecting. So, Representative Uglum, I think this is a great amendment, and I think that this is something that should be done. It's being done on the other modes of transit that we've seen, and I trust Representative Howe did pay his way on the Green Line. sorry, but I just think that it is something that absolutely should be done. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Atkins.
No, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm struggling a little bit with this. Having spent some time in Europe with Senator Senjum on U of M fellowship, we spent a lot of time on European systems over there, and they are similar to what we're doing here. You're responsible to get your ticket, and then you can travel actually any type of transportation, whether it be bus or rail or train. It is fast, it is convenient, And they do have an enforcement system where people are checked, as Representative Howe suggested is done, and we do need to do more of that, because I, too, was quite shocked to see that there are people abusing the system, and we know there will always be some. My concern here is that we don't end up building turnstiles and kind of complicated and expensive procedures to get onto our transit systems that end up exceeding the cost, which I suspect some of these other places that you're talking about, that exceeds the cost that we're losing. And so it would be nice if we could put some sort of cap on this that says that they have to do it within, you know, what they're finding out is the average loss in the system, and not creating a system that's very expensive and cumbersome without that cap on it. So we have this in many areas in Health and Human Services now, where we end up putting in compliance measures that actually cost a lot more than we're saving by catching the small percent of people that are violating it. So I appreciate what we're trying to do here, and I support the attempt to fix it. I just want to make certain that as we move ahead, we look at some sort of cap, that we don't spend more than we're saving in the effort to do this.
Representative Hornstein.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and I'm okay with this amendment. However, a statement was made that they've never seen police enforce this on the light rail, and I'm probably the only member that rides it every day to and from the Capitol. It was a little dicey when we were debating Representative Hillstrom's bill at midnight the other day, whether I was going to catch the 1224 train, which is the last one I can catch at night to get to my connecting bus that leaves at 1 in the morning from 7th and Nicollet. However, I have seen police come on the train. I've seen them enforce this. I've seen people get tickets. Now, I haven't seen it as much lately. But I appreciate that the amendment gives the Met Council some flexibility in terms of how to enforce existing law around this. I'd be very loath to tell the Met Council police force how to allocate their limited resources, especially because later in this bill we're cutting funds from the Met Council, but we'll get to that later. But there is a problem here, Representative Uglum, and I'm glad that it's been identified. But there's many ways to address this. As Representative Norton said, I think the Met Council looked at a system that they have in places like New York and Boston, where people run through a card, through a turnstile. That's quite expensive. And there's also people that jump the turnstiles. So, you know, short of more personnel, I think it's going to be, a challenge. But nonetheless, it's a problem that needs to be addressed. And so I hope that we can leave it to the Met Council to figure this out. I think we're sending a message that it's a concern. But, you know, the idea that somehow this isn't, there aren't spot checks happening on a regular basis. I know that's happening as a fact. I know people are being caught. I know it's a steep fine, but we need to have something more. Maybe we have an increased advertising campaign and a lot more visibility for a certain limited amount of time to send a message to the people that are breaking the law. So there's a lot of tools at the Met Council's disposal. I think if we're going to really be serious about this, it might require some more resources on our part. But I think this idea of turnstiles, et cetera, you know, may seem at the surface the way to do it, but I think that's going to end up being far more expensive and is not going to make a serious dent in this problem.
Thank you.
Representative Joskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Uglum, for bringing this amendment. And some members have heard my story from a few years ago. There's one time that I've ridden on the light rail, and my family and I and some friends came to town for a Vikings game, and we got on. And is it blue now, Representative Hornstein? I'm still confused. Blue or green?
Where did you get aboard?
Somewhere down south of the Vikings Stadium, the Mall of America.
Likely the blue line.
The blue line. Okay, we were on the blue train. And so we went up and bought our tickets, and everybody got your tickets in order, kids, you all have it, you're all good to go. And we got on the train, and I went to the front of the train, to the back of the train, every place on the train with my ticket in the air saying, who's taking tickets? And there was no one on the train taking tickets. So Representative Uglum and some of us have been talking about this a long time. Fortunately, or maybe Unfortunately, is it the Star Tribune that came out with the article saying 1 in 10 are cheating the system? We seem to be encouraging this type of behavior by not having a sound system in place in order to make sure that, people are actually paying their fair share and paying what they owe to the train or to the taxpayers of Minnesota, but instead at this point taxpayers are subsidizing that $1.5 million. So thank you for bringing this forward. Members, if we don't do something like this, because the Met Council hasn't done it, they've heard the message, if we don't bring something like this forward, the message that's predominant right now is in Minnesota you can cheat the train. That seems to be what that article conveyed to people, and I would suspect that as more people read that article, our collections may actually diminish from where they are now. So we need something like this in place, and Representative Uglum, thank you for the amendment.
Thank you. Mr. Shetland, did you want to make a couple comments? Welcome to the committee.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Members, or Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Judd Shetland. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak to the bill and the amendment. With me is our Chief of Police, Chief Harrington, former Senator, who now is our former Chief of Police in the City of St. Paul as well, and he works with us on the enforcement end of our transit system, the fare enforcement end. And I would like to speak to Representative Uglum's amendment. That audit that was brought forward was an audit that the council actually did ourselves. We are in the position of always wanting to make sure where we can make improvements in our fare collection. So we did that on purpose in order to figure out where we were as far as fare collection. And the report showed we were in the 94 percentile. On the blue line, we're closer to 97%, and we are again always looking for ways to improve that. But there were some comments about other systems across the country that have these fare barriers, and in fact, most of our peer cities that have light rail, Phoenix, Denver, Seattle, Dallas, Portland, Houston, San Diego, Buffalo, Charlotte, all of those areas that have light rail operate on an honor system type. Fare system as well. And we saw the amendment Friday night, and so we had some staff working on this over the weekend and this morning, and we do have some numbers about what it would cost to actually put up a barrier and ticket turnstile type of cost. And to retrofit all of the blue line platforms and the green line platforms, it would cost us in excess of $100 million, close to about $107 million. And we know that that isn't what the committee is asking us to do, or maybe you are, but realizing that that's extremely a heavy amount of dollars, especially in the context of our budget in House File 4, there's no way we would be able to do that because we're in the position where we're likely having to reduce service today regardless. But there is an approach where we could look at potentially bringing in some more officers as well to do that. Our folks are looking at that, but again, there's a very heavy operations maintenance cost to that because it means that we are hiring additional officers. But what I can tell the committee is that we appreciate the concern. I think that is valid. I know Representative Hornstein, you mentioned the same thing, and that it's we think the same, and that's why it wasn't an audit that was done of the council. It was an audit done by the council in order to find out exactly where we're at as far as fare collection. And when the blue line opened, the fare collection was a little bit lower at that time, and it grew up to 97%. And the green line has been open for about 9 months. And again, we've got the university and a number of schools along the line. And Representative Nash, we appreciate your son's ridership. That's great. But it is it's again, we are in the very early stages of this, and so we use the audit as a tool to tell us where we're at, and we're going to continue to make that work. But I just want folks to know that we do take this very serious, and I mentioned I have the chief here with me to talk about how we go about making sure people are paying their fares.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the committee record.
Mr. Chairman, John Harrington, Chief of Police Metro Transit. In fact, The Green Line, after it opened, about 3 months after it opened, I asked for an audit to try and determine where and how well we were doing on fare collections. Over the course of 2014, Metro Transit officers stopped and checked 1,347,000 people to find out whether they had fares. During that year, we exited 6,446 individuals off of the train who did not have a fare. And what we did is we took a first-time policy that says the first time it might be a mistake. So 6,000, almost 6,500 people said, I didn't know I had to pay the fare. And so we said, well, you have to get off at the next stop, and you go pay your fare now. And that then got documented in the system so that we would know that the next time we caught you, it wasn't a mistake anymore. Of that 6,500, 1,592 were either arrested or charged or tagged for fare evasion in 2014. We are one of the busiest police departments in the state of Minnesota, and while on paper we look like we have about 200 cops, it's actually 108 full-time officers supplemented by about 25 part-time officers. So we're a little bit bigger than Bloomington, maybe, but not quite as big as St. Paul or Minneapolis, while serving a population, a daily ridership of about 330,000 people every day, so about the equivalent size of the city of St. Paul. If we look at those fare numbers from 2014, that means that the counties that we worked in collected about $450,000 in fines. That does not come back directly to Metro Transit. And what we started to see was a compliance rate differential between the Green Line and the Blue Line. Blue Line, which has been in existence for 10 years, we're averaging about 78 tags a month, almost 80 tags a month on the Blue Line every month. Green Line, when it first opened up, we were averaging about 110 tags a month during that same period of time, during their first 6 months. So we had a differential in the compliance rate between the two of those. We did note that a couple of our really aggressive cops, one, in fact, Lenny Mitchell, checked 42,000 checks just by himself, and another one, Larry Wright, over on the Blue Line, checked 89,000 times during the course of 1 year. So I can promise you that we are, in fact, checking the fares. Starting in 2015, though, we've seen some things that have improved already. In 2015, thus far, we've had 923 fare checks completed in the first 3 months. So our fare check rate has actually gone up in terms of the number of people we're checking every month. That's gone up, despite the fact that I'm actually down about five or six people. Several people have gotten injured over the course of the last 6 months, and I've got a few people out injured on duty, as every police department does. And you can't replace those with a stroke of a pen. You have to take 6 months to hire and replace those people. During that first 3 months of this year, we've issued 2,218 fare warnings where we've taken the folks off of the train, and we've arrested or charged another 416 people for a total of 2,634 fare check enforcement activities during the first 3 months of this year. What that translates to us is an increase in compliance rate, whereas in last year we had Green Line was at about 110 non-compliance per month. This year we're averaging about 70 non-compliant people per month, and Blue Line has dropped down to about 68 non-compliant people per month. So we're seeing the numbers equalize on Blue Line and Green Line. We're seeing the number of fare checks go up steadily. We are in the process of hiring another group of people to add additional staff to the Blue Line, and hopefully we'll be able to get those folks that are injured on duty and get them back working on the Green Line in time for, Twins opener today, and there'll be a significant number of people that we check the fares at special events at the end of the line primarily, though. We find that's a better use of the staff. So we stage at the end of the line, so when everybody's getting off, we check them as they're getting off the train rather than try and walk through a packed train of Twins fans, happy Twins fans, and try and check them that way. We find that's a more effective way of capturing the data.
Thank you. Representative Earhart?
Mr. Chairman, I was concerned that perhaps the right type of people weren't being hired that were going to go out and check these people. And I was going to suggest now that Jed is up there, that there were a few years ago when Representative Swigum was Speaker, and he had a friend, Representative Don Ferrix, and they used to go out every night after they left here, and they would check all the buses in the area to see who was riding the buses, how many, and if they were paying their fares. Then they would come back and report this to the body in the following days. And I would suggest, if you're looking for some real hawkshaws on this, that Swigum is still around somewhere, and he might be willing for a fee to go out and help you run these people down. But anyway, just a thought.
Thank you. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry for Mr. Harrington. Is it Commander Chief? I didn't get the...
Chief
Harrington. Well, you won't remember me. The last time I saw you, aside from being a senator when I used to be a political junkie and watch you online, was I was a student of yours, community-oriented policing at Metro State back in 2000-2001. So, well, good to see you. Anyway, my question is, you crunched numbers regarding retrofitting existing lines. Naturally, that's going to be more expensive when retrofitting. Did you crunch any numbers to be proactive and implement this in the proposed Southwest Light Rail?
Mr. Chair and Representative, we do have that number for the Green Line extension and the Blue Line extension, which would be the Botineau line. I have those combined. I'm sorry I don't have them broken out by individual lines, but it would cost the project an additional $34 million. And then we are estimating that the total annual technician cost would be for operating and maintenance, and then for utility side of that would be around $1.3 million a year. So we did take a look at that.
Representative Ugel.
Mr. Chair, I want to wrap this up in the interest of time. I just have a couple of comments. One, I think there's a lot of work to be done here. When you have $1.5 million a year of people skipping fares, there's a lot of work to be done. In terms of the numbers that you have there in terms of turnstiles and everything else, the amendment doesn't speak to that. Right. And other light rail operations have seen it about a 10-year payback, which isn't too bad in business. But all that being said, I just want to shed some light on this. I hope that the Met Council will take a real hard look at increasing enforcement. And therefore, Mr. Chair, I withdraw my amendment.
Representative Uglin withdraws the A-12 amendment. Thank you. Representative Earhart, A-13.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do I have to move this or what?
Representative Earhart moves the A-13 amendment.
I will move the A-13 amendment. You know, Mr. Chairman, some time ago, when I got back here in February, thinking about ways that we could improve the funding for transportation, I had been thinking about this for a number of years, so I gathered the finance people up on the sixth floor and third floor, wherever they're hiding, and said, can you get me a list of shifts we've already shifted out of the dedicated transportation funds, out of the gas tax and the tab fees and the fees on sales of autos? And I said, they came up with a figure of $200 million a year. And I said, well, can you also get me one on transportation-related sales taxes that might be shifted to the general fund? And they came up with a list of about $21 million in that pile. And there were more. Well, on March 10th, I had press conference to release what I discovered, and I know by then Representative Howe and others had discovered that there were some other opportunities here to put money into the transportation system. So when I explained my thoughts on at the March 10th press conference, I said, look, we've got some monies that need to be moved around. Other seats are using general fund money. And I think we ought to investigate this. But what I also did was include some new taxes. And I said, look, one half of the group here doesn't want new taxes, and the other half doesn't want general fund money. So I think eventually we're going to work on getting probably some from both sides and coming up with a really good transportation bill. I was asked at that time, well, what about the fact that people move this money around and we don't have assurances that it will remain in there dedicated to transit and roads and bridges and everything we do in transportation? So I said, well, I have here in my hand a constitutional amendment that will dedicate all that I've talked about by constitutional amendment to the transportation funding. And I didn't put that in. I just kind of sat on it. And then when we, House File 4 came by, I could see that some of those same things were included and that I'd been talking about. And I thought, well, what is the biggest one in the choicest plum here? Probably it's the automotive parts, which will be producing roughly 310 this biennium and close to a half a billion in the 18-19 biennium. So I think that that's a worthwhile piece of goods that we ought to dedicate by constitutional process. And so that's what my amendment is all about. Let's put some stiff money in there that's going to be able to be used for roads and bridges and other transportation users for the long haul, and not have it fade in and out because some future legislature decides that they want to buy something else with the funds that year. And that's my amendment.
Thank you, Representative Barrett. Any questions, members? Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Question for... would this not have to go to GovOps? Is this not something... it seems to me that it would have to go somewhere else as a result of being introduced here, and this seems out of place.
Representative Nash, if we did approve the amendment, yes, it would have to make another stop.
You know, of course, Representative Mr. Chairman, this bill is going to go to another place, too. It's not going to stop here and go to the floor. So it's going to visit other places as well.
Any other questions for members? All right. Representative Earhart moves his motion to move the A13 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay?
Nay.
Nay. That motion does not prevail. The A13 amendment is not approved. Representative Hornstein, the A14 amendment.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I've got a couple amendments related to some Met Council finance and policy and CTIB provisions. This is Representative Runbeck, the ones I don't like. We heard these bills in committee. So again, not to belabor what we've already heard, but you know what the A14 really gets at is a lot of change in policy as it relates to transitways, a process by which transitways are determined. You know, through an alternatives analysis process. We have prohibitions on debts from NVEST and requiring LRT operating and maintenance costs not be covered in terms of the federal issues here. The bottom line with this, and my main concern, is that transitways are a critical part of expanding the transit system. particularly the bus rapid transit. An example of this is the Orange Line, which is starts at a park and ride in Lakeville and goes up through to downtown Minneapolis. The Red Line through Cedar. The proposed Gateway Corridor, which goes out to Woodbury. We also have something called arterial bus rapid transit, which is a line along Snelling Avenue. Penn Avenue is an example of that. American Boulevard in Bloomington. A fantastic way to make our bus system more efficient and user-friendly and fast. Why we would make it more difficult to have that is problematic for me. So if our goal is to increase the efficiency and effectiveness of our transit system and to be able to access federal monies, I think this puts a real damper on that. I oppose this for the same reasons I opposed it in committee and would ask the committee to take another look at this question. Again, we're looking at three modes here, light rail, bus rapid transit, arterial bus rapid transit are covered here. And the last thing I would just say in conclusion, Mr. Chair, is that I think we're asking these types of infrastructure projects, we're holding them to a different standard that we have other types of infrastructure projects in terms of the kinds of hoops that they need to go through. So, again, I just really view this as a way to delay and really seriously impact our ability to develop transitways in the region, and that's not going to move us forward in terms of jobs, in terms of development, in terms of return on investment. Mr. Chair, we had that study from the Itasca project, transitways, particularly light rail. For every dollar spent, we get $3 in return. If you ride the Green Line, you'll see that. It's not a hypothetical study. We're actually seeing that kind of return on investment. And I'll just conclude by, again, reiterating the example I gave in committee, which is we had a business in Washington County that wanted to locate in the former State Farm building out on I-94. One of the reasons they chose to go to Dakota County near Representative Mason is that there was a bus rapid transit line there, and there wasn't one. The Gateway Corridor project had not been built yet, and again, this would seriously affect our ability to get that Gateway project going. So businesses are making decisions. Young people are making decisions on where to locate based on where these transitways are.
Thank you. Questions from members? Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and certainly appreciate the spirit with which Representative Hornstein brings his amendment. I would urge that we oppose it. I think we're addressing a couple of policy questions. And one, is the whole idea of should the Met Council fully fund its operations before it goes ahead and builds new expansion light rail? One question. Should the expansion of LRT continue at its present pace? When I think the facts, if we really get into the facts, I think it would suggest that we are choosing the most staggeringly high-cost effort and it delivers only trivial numbers. When you look at the total transit trips taken in the metropolitan area, you just don't make a dent with, spending $1 billion. So, and the sad fact is that our bus system has been sitting pretty much at a pause for the last 4 or 5 years, no service expansions at all. And so really, where is the big picture? And I'm trying to say, and I think we all are saying, let's get a better handle on this. Let's know what we're getting. I understand that there's still $4.2 billion of unfunded transit needs. Where's that money going to come from, and what will it get us? This is a time to say maybe a pause is right. And secondly, who says you shouldn't fully fund the operating costs of the systems you build? That doesn't make any sense. So those are my points, and I'd encourage a no vote.
Representative Hausman was ahead of me.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is one of those areas where I just long for our business community to finally find its voice. I mean, the St. Paul Area Chamber in Greater Minneapolis have a voice they express from time to time, but with such timid energy behind it that it doesn't move anyone here. But The great tragedy is, of course, the catch-22. We also can't pass bills where we fund transit, and so the catch-22 that unless you have operating money, you can't build it, but you also can't pass a funding stream for the operations. A strange sort of catch-22. In the rest of the country, this isn't the case. As I've gone to some of the national conferences, I'm always amazed. It is often the Republican mayors and the business community that are leading the workshops, Our economic competitors all across the country who are doing this faster and more effectively than we. So with each one of these years, we fall further behind. We have ample evidence of how crucial this is to the economic health and competitiveness of our region, and yet here in this state, for some reason, those largest business players, and they're all there, they've done the research, haven't yet found their effective voice as is happening in other parts of the country. A great regret, and I hope sometime soon that reality will change. Until then, we keep doing things like this, where we move backwards.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. Just one quick point before we vote, and maybe Mr. Shetland could correct me, but I believe that the light rail and bus rapid transit portion of our ridership has significantly increased. I think we're close to like 20% now of the total. So it would be wrong to say that it's a minuscule amount. And again, we will get riders with more choices. Obviously, the local bus service, again, which we'll address in the next amendment, which is being cut, is the workhorse of the system, as Peter Bell used to always say, the former Met Council chair. But an increasing part of the system that is growing and we're attracting new riders comes from transitways, the very things that are being gutted in the bill. So that's the purpose of the amendment, and I'd strongly encourage a yes vote.
Thank you. Representative Runbeck.
Mr. Chair, if I could just make one more comment, and I don't know if the page is here, but I do have some information to pass out. Again, I mean, I think the big picture is somewhat missed, just urge you to take a look at some of the data about what's happening with transit ridership across the country. The numbers are barely budging, and we are not much better in terms of ridership than we were in 1970, having spent billions of dollars across the country. So it's more than about ridership, I think. It's probably about economic development and many other things. But we need to take another look. That's my bottom line. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two comments here. The first was there was a comment regarding the business community, and that just reminded me something happened to me about 2 weeks ago, and that was I had to get a new computer for my wife. And so I went to the store that I had been shopping at for years called General Nano Systems near the University of Minnesota on University Avenue there. And now, granted, I hadn't been there in a couple years, but that's where for many years I'd been buying my stuff. And I went there, and it was closed down. I was extremely disappointed, So I quickly did a Google search, and I'm looking at it now, and it shut down because of light rail. And so there is adverse impact to the business community. The next thing was there was a comment about providing more options for our commuters. Well, providing more options in and of itself shouldn't be the goal. The goal should be providing cost-effective options. If the goal were simply provide more options, we could take those same dollars and buy. I recall when the Hiawatha line was being built, there were all kinds of numbers being thrown around at the time saying you could buy a Jaguar for every rider and it would be cheaper than the cost of the construction at the time. So if we wanted to provide simply options, we could do that too. But that should not be the goal in and of itself, Mr. Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Runbeck, you talk about the bigger picture. I think there is a bigger picture here. And I've sat on this committee for a couple of years, and we've heard a lot of testimony about trends and what our competitive cities are doing. And as someone who lives outside the metropolitan area, and we just had a town hall meeting in Nicollet, we chatted about how this is one Minnesota. And we talked about how the metropolitan area needs a strong economic base in the rural part of the state. But also we know in the countryside that we need a strong metropolitan area. And we have heard consistently about the trends, especially young people, but also older people who are moving downtown and really demanding increased choices and increased improved rapid transit of this type. And you look at the competitive, the cities we do compete against, the growth is there. And so the bigger picture is quite clear to me, and that is that we need a strong transportation system in the Twin Cities. The other point is to Representative Hausman, you talk about the business community. I hear that a little differently, to be honest with you. And I attended the One Minnesota Conference, and the Itasca project, the way I understand it, is based in the business community of the metropolitan area, and they're way out front on this. And they're very clear that this is, they share my image of a dynamic metropolitan and metropolitan area, and these investments are long term. I'm one who rides that green line a lot because I live near here, and it's very convenient for me. But it's a dynamic part of the city, and I'm going to make a bold prediction. We're going to see downtown St. Paul's going to look different in a few years, and you can see the development along the line going as I go over to the university and that sort of thing. So this is part of the big picture, and I don't think we want to sacrifice it. I support Representative Hornstein.
Questions for members? Seeing none, Representative Hornstein moves the A-14 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay.
Nay.
Nay. Motion does not prevail. The A-14 is not moved. Representative Hornstein, would you like to stay with your theme?
Might as well.
Theme?
We're on the transit theme. Again, I'll be concise here in terms of the purpose of this amendment. Again, we have another set of issues related to transit that are problematic in the bill. This really aims to get at two of them. One is...
Excuse me, Representative Hornstein. Representative Hornstein moves the A-16 amendment. Sorry, members.
Sorry about that.
That's my fault. My fault.
So the A-16 really aims at a couple of issues. One is I think we've had a little debate and dispute here about, does the bill actually cut Met Council's base? Does it cut their funding? And I've received some documents from the council, and I think very clearly when the dust clears from the CTIP shift, the fact that we're taking some of the excess from MBEST, the fact that Metro Mobility costs have to be offset with some of these changes and shifts, the Met Council is telling us that in fiscal year 16 there is a 8% reduction in bus operations. That climbs to 17% the following year, 21% in 18, 23% in 19, 24% in 2020, and then all the way up to 25% in 2021. So this is very, very problematic. This is going to certainly result in cuts in services, at a time when the system is growing. And we've had a lot of testimony at our public hearing about how important this is for people to get to their jobs. 80% are going to their jobs and to school. 40%, a full 40% of the commuters in downtown Minneapolis are using transit. This is going to be a cut to that workhorse of the system, our local bus system. So we get at that with this amendment, simply restoring the Met Council to its current base funding. So that's in terms of the Metro Transit cuts. And again, now we're asking the Metro Police to justifiably look at some additional resources for enforcement on fares. The second thing that my amendment does is to really address this question of shifting money from CTIB away from transitway development and towards transitway operations. And what I find problematic in this is that we're taking money from a locally accountable county boards, the five county boards in the metro area that actually had public hearings, took the political risk, and voted to impose a sales tax on themselves. And now we're scooping up that money and taking it to the Met Council. the Met Council's unelected. People have pointed that out, that they're concerned about the accountability issues. I hope, again, Representative Sanders and others, I think bipartisanly, are looking at ways to address governance issues. And hopefully we can do that in the next year or two. But currently we don't have an elected Met Council, or partially elected with local elected officials and appointees, a combination thereof. I think that's one direction people want to move. But nonetheless, we're taking it away from counties and giving it to an unelected body. And there, I understand, I think there's some 47 local option sales taxes that we have at all levels of government in our state. This sets a precedent that we're sending this message to local elected officials that the state can scoop up at any time and take your money that you have collected for a very specific defined purpose to your constituents, and take that for a purpose that the legislature wants it to go for. And I think that is a very, very problematic precedent that we're setting. And so this amendment addresses that by keeping CTIB whole and keeping the status quo when it comes to having these county boards assess this tax and use it for the purposes that they promised their constituents that it would be used for. So those are the two main thrusts of this amendment. And again, the precedent of taking a local option sales tax that a local unit of government has imposed, has taken the political risk to impose, has promised their constituents that it's going to be used for a specific purpose, and then scooping that up as a state and giving it to, the Met Council, which is really, for all intents and purposes, kind of a quasi-state agency. So that means we could do that with any local option sales tax, maybe something that we've done for schools, and give that to the Department of Education. That is a really bad precedent, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative. Their comments and questions from members. It's important. I would like to just tell the committee too. I do appreciate Chair Dunnick and staff had a conference call with us on Friday to walk through some budget items and some concerns that they had. So we certainly appreciate the fact that they reached out to us to explain those. There is some debate as to whether we feel these are cuts or kind of hold harmless entities when the budgeted forecast already includes the 5%, 6% increase that MVEST has been doing in the past. So just wanted to say thank you to them for reaching out and walking through that for us to get an understanding of that. So we appreciate your comments as well. Any other comments from members? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Hornstein. I feel your passion for rail and for transit, and I think we all have to keep in mind, our responsibility for that piece. But I just wanted to caution and kind of remind us all that it's easy to put together statistics into the future about what changes we occur today, but that never stays static. I think with all of us, even for me, and when I have to deal with budgeting that where I currently work at church, we understand that there's going to be times in which there are going to be a need for efficiencies and abilities to actually provide more for less. And sometimes situations like this require us to make those decisions. And so the question also needs to also be asked, looking at the changes in the funding streams in the future, what options do we have within the Met Council and with other transit authorities to be able to become more efficient as well? And I think that's something still for us to be looking forward in the future, and I know some of those will occur. It's part of the ingenuity that we have as humans and Minnesotans to be able to do that. So whereas I can understand that on the paper it looks like we'll be looking at 25% less and so forth, what happens is usually that it'll be certainly much less than that, and it could even be an increase in busing because we find better ways of doing that. So I just look at it and saying, I understand the need and I understand the concern, but I also understand that the fact that when we're faced with issues, we find ways of accommodating as well. So I think we should think about that, and I do not support your amendment at this time because I have more confidence and more trust in the future. So thank you.
Seeing no further questions, Representative Hornstein moves the A16 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay.
Nay.
Nay. Nay. The motion does not prevail. A16 is not approved. Representative Johnson, A15 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A15 amendment.
Representative Johnson moves the A15.
To the this amendment. Removes Section 8. It's on page 35 of the DE2 amendment. On the idea, this is a prohibition on aesthetic enhancements that would preclude the use of any public funds for making the enhancements. We've seen them where I live, and we learned in testimony the other day. Here, I thought it was Kasota stone. I was so proud that we had Kasota stone on our bridge embankments, but it's actually a cement. It's offer a different color to some of the bridges in our area that breaks up the gray. I think there's room for these aesthetic enhancements. I think they add to our quality of life. I think especially in a state that prides itself on a tourist state where we seek to attract travelers from across the nation to come here and fish and do other things. I think we can afford a few small aesthetic enhancements on a few of our bridges and roads, and so that's the purpose of the amendment. I ask for your support.
Thank you. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would like to speak very strongly in support of this amendment. To me, our job is to do the best job possible. And I just can't fathom the original legislation that would have people not try to do their best for anything. And that's the way I'm looking at this, and that's why I think it's so important for us to allow anybody that's working on a project to do the best job that they can so that we will be proud of the products that is produced. I mean, that's why people travel all over the world, is to look at artwork, to look at things that are different and unique. And why would we not want to do that in Minnesota?
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just have a question for Representative Druskowski, if he's willing. And that is, there was a comment about tourists or others that are coming to the state of Minnesota, which is a good thing. And the question I would have for Representative Druskowski, do you think that tourists would be more or less likely to come here as a result of seeing those leaf designs that you were showing me the other day or other colors? Yeah, exactly. Or do you think that tourists would come to Minnesota more or less likely as a result of road congestion and other things that your amendment would help add additional dollars into roads?
I'm just coming.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Lucero. Members, I have with me a photo of a nice, beautiful leaflet design on a, I don't know, probably a couple cement mixers full of concrete into a structure on Highway 371 south of Baxter. I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of dollars of taxpayer money went into it, but I'm willing to show it to anybody who hasn't seen it. This is only one example of what we're seeing in terms of wasteful spending in our transportation dollars across the state. And if indeed we are not being the stewards of the public resources and upholding our fiduciary responsibility to make sure that the resources that the people of Minnesota believe are being spent on transportation are being spent on transportation, we are indeed failing in our responsibility. Now, I'll tell you something, members. This leaflet design, no matter how pretty it is not transportation. That is for somebody's edification for artwork. And if that's the case, Representative Lucero, I think they come here so that they can have access to our resources, so that they can cross safe bridges, so that they can adequately traverse the beautiful landscape of our state, which they wouldn't otherwise even come to see in the first place if we didn't have the type of transportation infrastructure necessary. So for us to suggest that our responsibility and our first priority around transportation dollars is artwork is an outrageous thing where I come from. I would suggest the author of the amendment and others who don't like this provision might want to look at legacy money or some other money that's already dedicated for artwork and suggest maybe that should be used to do this rather than this which is certainly a misplacement of the trust of the people of Minnesota, being put into things that have nothing to do with properly taking care of maintaining our transportation system, rather than something that is really something completely different than that. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to have a clarification made, and maybe Mr. Burris can do that. The way that the current DE2 bill is laid out in this particular section, does that eliminate local jurisdictions and taxing authorities to be able to accomplish these enhancements, or is this only just limited to state funds?
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair and members, the limitations in the DE2 amendment version is limited to state and federal sources, so local units of government could utilize local dollars towards these aesthetic enhancement components.
Okay. Thank you. I think that is also helpful in the fact that it doesn't eliminate them. It just kind of narrowly defines rather who can do them as well. So thank you.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I very much appreciate Representative Hornstein's efforts here, though I suppose it's probably...
Johnson.
Oh, Representative Johnson.
I support it. Don't get me wrong.
Okay, sorry. Representative Johnson, my mistake. And I suspect it's not going to pass here. That seems to be the way of this. But I just really have to say that I don't think anyone ever said that artwork is first. I don't think anyone said that we want to spend more to make our roads look better. In fact, what I heard was testimony from the department that said most of the enhancements that you see are done under the bid for the project as it was originally bid, and within that they try to utilize the funds to have it look the way the community members and the citizens wanted. They didn't say we use extra money. In fact, they testified that we use money currently within the bidding process and make it work within that budget. I'm concerned about a shift to locals. If you make something look super stark and ugly and you have a community that's trying to draw people into your community, it will then fall upon local taxpayers to do what is currently being done under normal construction costs. And if our department has already testified in this committee that they're not using extra money, that they're using the current bidding process to do things that either look like bricks when they're really not bricks or stone, are we going to see challenges all over the state when that is being done? Because is Representative Drazkowski going to, you know, wander around the highways and say, gee, this looks aesthetically interesting, I want to challenge you, prove to me that it didn't cost more? I think we're trying to micromanage our department to do the things that we want them to do for our districts without really a way to prove what's happened. And so I'm very opposed to this, and I just also will throw in there, I mentioned this at my local chamber meeting, and there wasn't a show of support from the folks in that room either, because they want things that draw people into their community, that enhance the look of the community as citizens see fit, and not something stark and ugly on the outside needlessly. So I'm very supportive of Representative Clark's Representative Clark Johnson's gee whiz. I'm sorry, his office is right by mine. Anyway, I'm very supportive of his efforts here, and hope that before all is said and done, this what I consider ridiculous inclusion comes out.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you know, members, we were told when we got here this session that there were millions and millions and millions of dollars into the future of road construction and fixing our crumbling infrastructure that was not being properly taken care of. If indeed that is the case, members, and this provision in the bill provides that $22 million, it's not something the department is just eating or somehow, there's an actual cost to this. This is $22 million that the taxpayers of Minnesota are being forced to fund into pretty and is not going out to take care of the crumbling infrastructure. If we, as the decision makers for the people of the state of Minnesota, cannot see the priorities from where we are at and properly funnel the limited amount of dollars that the people of Minnesota have to those priorities, we are failing in our job. So I urge you to keep this in the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Seeing no other questions or comments, Representative Mason, except for Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to... My understanding from the people that I talk to is that when they... If we were doing a job, they want it, they want it done right. And that, to me, makes the best product available that we can afford within the bid process. And I... All I can... This, to me... Is this amendment? I cannot tell you how much I hate it, but I mean, it makes no sense to me. Everything it.
If I could remind you to use the microphone, okay, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, all our life we've been trying to do things that are excellent, go forward, and this to have something in our policy that says you're going to go for mediocrity. I mean, how do you explain that to anybody, especially after the product's done it? And people are not going to be pleased because we didn't do the best job possible. End of story. I'm upset. Sorry.
That, Representative Johnson, moves the A-15 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay?
No. Nay.
Motion does not prevail. And move the A-15 is not amended. Representative Drazkowski, members, we do have the A-19 amendment. I think we talked to staff there, and in the A-19 amendment was time-stamped, but it did not get posted at that time, so we will allow the A-19 amendment. Representative Drazkowski to that amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. There's been a lot of discussion about the need for dedication. We have to have dedicated forms of funding, and you know, so I thought, well, let's see what dedication means in terms of funding and how things are put together. So what this would do, certainly for the purpose of discussion at a minimum, is what would happen if we repealed the gas tax and took it out? Because that is, I think, the tax that at least some opponents of the Republican proposal, the House proposal, seem to suggest is that we should go forward and raise the gas tax, because in their mind, that's the only form of stable or dedicated funding that is available for roads, and anything other than this type of dedicated funding is not adequate, because there's some sort of special ability that this funding brings with it in terms of it supposedly being dedicated. And I'll offer to you that if you take, and this is a statute, we have the statutory ability, members, to get rid of the gas tax. The dedication, members, happens through the vehicle or the vessel in which these tax dollars are placed into as offered through our state constitution. So the reality is, if you do repeal this and you have the ability to repeal it, the dedication as it is envisioned by the people who suggest that this is the only way we can fund transportation goes away. And so I just like to open that for discussion, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. Any questions from members? Representative Drazkowski, I understand from your amendment that it would actually zero out the gas tax, not repeal it, but zero it out.
Oh, thank you for the qualifier there, Mr. Chair.
Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, this is a little bit radical, but I don't see why we don't pass this thing and see if we get any reaction from anybody around in the community.
Any other questions or comments from members? Representative Hausman.
And you intend to vote on this?
No.
If you were going to vote on it, I would ask for a roll call.
Okay, thank you. I guess I would just Representative Drazkowski, I appreciate the conversation. That is absolutely one of the things that, as we've gone through this committee process from the start, we've talked about dedicated funds over and over again, and that we need a dedicated source. And I think people are under the misconception that the gas tax is absolutely dedicated. So I guess, you know, I appreciate from a from a the standpoint of process that you're here today to make that point that at any point in time the gas tax could be zeroed out and we would not have the funding. So in regards to other legislatures in the future repealing our dedicated whether it's a vehicle sales parts tax or rental tax or lease tax, that the same thing could apply. So I appreciate the conversation. Representative Drozdowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you know, I think it just points out that the legislature is the one who decides what part of funding or what type of funding, of course, with the governor's approval, is truly dedicated to transportation. And if the legislature and the governor didn't want to keep the gas tax in law, it would no longer be dedicated to transportation. If the legislature and the governor decide that general fund money and including some of the sales tax proposals that conversions that is in this bill are the types of monies that need to go to transportation, that will be our dedicated source of funding for transportation. And that's what we included in our bill. So I appreciate the construct of the bill. And this, again, was brought forward in order to illustrate a point. And the point, again, is the legislature and the governor decide what's dedicated and what's not in terms of transportation. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would withdraw the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you for withdrawing that, Mr. Chair and Representative Drozdowski. And I guess the other point is, yes, the legislature has the power to do this. The legislature has not done it and will not do it. So I think with that, I'm glad that we're not moving forward with this.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the other point that I think is really critical here is that the gas tax is dedicated constitutionally to roads. So if we are in a situation, this can happen next year, the following year, where we are facing significant deficits, we would not be able to tap the gas tax or the revenue for the gas tax that's already in the Highway User Trust Fund, already there. We could not take it to pay off of a deficit or to use it to fund something else in this massive state budget. And that's really the key issue, in my opinion. And so that's why the dedicated gas tax is popular where I live. And when I talk to my neighbors say that gas tax is a place where we can fund roads because we know it will be there. And it can't be taken away when the legislature is facing a deficit. And I think that's the key issue with it.
All right. With that, Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm surprised that you say that, Representative Johnson, because you just voted no on something that would make another part of our funding dedicated in the same sense that the gas tax is. And I don't understand that, because half the people that were testifying, maybe more yesterday, whenever we had the public testimony on it, their concern was that this money is not dedicated, however you want to define dedicated. It's dedicated by the Constitution, but not maybe what the folks in the audience of voting on, the voting audience would say, is not dedicated because they can unvote it. That's certainly true. But I think you lost some people, at least those that were testifying when we had, 60 people here. They all wanted assurance that the money that you were going to put forth is going to be dedicated, and so they can do their long-range planning. They can buy right away, and they can do the planning that stretches out over a number of years, and so that contractors can count on the money coming in. And so for you to look at dedicating, you need to look at dedication of some of the stuff that you're offering in this bill. And I think you missed, but you have another chance, the one that was proposed a little while ago on the motor vehicle parts. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And since we keep talking about the gasoline tax and all that stuff and how much it's dedicated and so forth, The question remains is that of all of the funding that we need for the Department of Transportation, the gasoline tax, even with the governor's proposed increase, is only about 50% of the total cost that we need for the Department of Transportation, which means the other 50% can be pulled out just as strongly as you talk about, meaning that we still won't have enough funding for roads and bridges if that is cut in future legislators as well. The key is not about whether or not the gasoline tax is dedicated or not, or whether or not that's enough to fund all of it. The key point is how do we keep transportation a priority? And that's going to require us on a debate on a regular basis that transportation is an important piece. So when you talk about dedication and how, oh, that's going to solve our problem because it's got enough to cover all of our funding for the future, that's not the case. We still have about 50% of the funds that can be pulled at any time from the legislature. So let's not fall under the fallacy of saying just because we have more dollars in gasoline taxes that all of a sudden transportation is going to have enough funding unless we keep it a priority. So just food for thought.
All right. With that, Representative Petersburg, we'll move on to the A15-0420, your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do move that amendment. And this is really just a clarifying, it's I think a correction in regards to corridors of commerce and the projects that were listed. The current bill, as it's adapted or changed with the DE2 amendment, gives priority to those particular projects and programs funded under corridors of commerce that are currently under construction and are moving forward. And it leaves out a couple of potential projects that I think is important for us to clarify with this particular amendment. There are going to be some projects out there that have corridors of commerce dollars that may surround a project in which everybody has always considered it to be a corridor of commerce project and would be finalized and completed with the current procedure, that would be orphaned because no specific dollars has been done to that specific small project. We have seen that the Department of Transportation likes to include projects as being a specific bid or a specific program that may be 2 or 3 years under the project, may include bridges along with it, but if it's not have gotten any dollars specifically attested to that under the current proposal, they would be eliminated. As an example, Highway 14 down to from Nicollet to New Ulm, where there's been work done of corridors of commerce on each end of it, that little section in the middle has not had specifically dollars to it. So my amendment would just really clarify that if the project is connected to an existing project, that it also gets qualified as a priority rather than eliminating that from its presence. So it's really more of a clarification of what I think was the intent of the legislation. That's the amendment.
Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, I just wondering, are we getting pretty close to earmarking a stretch of road here that we don't usually do? And you're really describing it so it can only fit the one piece of road that you're talking about, I think.
Representative Petersburg.
Mr. Chair, no, I don't think. I think there are going to be other situations where this would qualify for as well. It's just that we want to make sure that we also don't earmark exceptions as well. So.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Petersburg, for putting this forward. I agree with you, obviously. The folks along the Highway 14 corridor want to complete it from Rochester to New Ulm, from New Ulm to Rochester, and this gives it potential. This is good language.
Seeing no other questions from members, Representative Petersburg moves the A15-0420 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. That amendment is adopted. And with that, Representative Nash, the A28, will stay with the Corridors of Commerce discussion.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'd like to move the A28 amendment.
So Nash moves the A28.
A28 amendment allows for projects that previously had been undertaken during the Corridors of Commerce program to continue to be. Specifically, there's an example in my district in Highway 212. It's been in Corridors of Commerce, and I just wanted to make sure that the language was amended to make sure that it does continue to be included in those criterion.
Any other questions from members? Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don't we usually have an uneven amount when it comes to, so we don't get locked in a deadlock on an even? Are we going to make this an even voting amount now if we do this, Mr. Chairman? I think I finally found the amendment here.
Yes, Representative Earhart?
You have another bill? I was looking at... Sorry.
Okay. All right, thank you. Any other questions from members? That Representative Nash moves the A28 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. That motion prevails. The A28 amendment is adopted. Representative Mason, A22.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is truly a constituent priority. I just recently received a letter from a constituent who bought a new car, and he was concerned that in Minnesota you only get 3 discounts. It's for anti-theft, passive restraint bags, and anti-lock brakes, whereas other states have done a lot more with technology. So he said, make this part of your priority list for 2015. My amendment.
Thank you. Representative Mason moves the A22 amendment. Any questions or comments from members? Representative Mason, is there a reason that this wouldn't have been brought up to Commerce?
Okay. It strictly at time. First, I didn't have time to get it to Commerce.
Okay.
Because it went, but I can withdraw, and I will be making this a bill for Commerce next year.
Okay. Any other questions from members? I guess, Representative Mason, I would urge that would be the place to start with that in regards to that. So I would support that to do that. And,
okay.
And
I will withdraw it.
Thank you. Representative Mason withdraws her amendment. Representative Hornstein, a 32 amendment.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm thinking we're maybe in the 7th or 8th inning here, and I'm 0 for 3 on my amendment, so kind of hoping to get a hit here. Representative Sanders, you know we're baseball fans. That was for you.
Thank you.
This relates to the penalty for the second offense on texting while driving. I listened carefully to the testimony, and I think there was a lot of interest in the committee in increasing this penalty when we had our hearing, and that's certainly the message I got from the public. I actually, we had a town meeting in my district right before our break, and this actually came up, and people were saying, hey, we're glad that you're increasing the penalties, but we just don't think $50 is going to do the trick. So the Senate actually has 300, so this would conform with them. And there was, as a result of the hearing, we had some communication with the courts, and they were also interested in a technical fix that we've put in into the bill that relates to this issue of allowing for the e-citation system to be used in the judicial case management that could accommodate this increased fine without changes to the uniform traffic citation. To be honest, I'm not an expert in how this works, but this is technical language from the courts, which seems if this is going to very more efficiently allow us to assess this penalty, then I'm all for it. So that's, we both have the technical fix and the increase in the fine.
Okay. Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hornstein, great idea. You might get a couple of hits out of this
one. All right, thank you. Maybe it's a double.
Well, speaking of maybe a double, Representative Hornstein, and we talked, I would like to offer an oral amendment instead of the $300 to move that down to $150. and just from the standpoint of court costs on top of the fines, could move that to over the $300 limit as well. So if you would entertain that.
Sure, Mr. Chair, and I really appreciate that. I think the fact that we're increasing the fine is the message that we want to send, and I completely accept your amendment here, and you know, we'll see what happens when we get to conference, but you know, that seems reasonable, and thank you for your support of this.
Thank you. With that, I'll offer the oral amendment of line 1.9 to change the $300 amount to $150. All those in favor of that oral amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. That oral amendment is approved. Any other comments or thoughts on Representative Hornstein's 832 amendment? Seeing none, Representative Hornstein moves the 832 amendment. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and the 832 amendment is adopted.
I'm going to get to one for Sarah first.
Representative Lucero, 835.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move the 835 amendment. What this amendment does is take $2.5 million that is going to be appropriated to the ports and give it to the Trooper Academy, the State Patrol. And there is a wave, my understanding is there's a wave of State Patrol retirements, and this is intended to get dollars to the Academy to help with the training and get trainees into the pipeline in anticipation of the retirements. Normal funding for the ports is in the bonding years, which would be next year, so this is not out of line. And even after this amendment of shifting the $2.5 million, the ports will still have the funding that they were expecting.
Okay. Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, I would be strongly against this. The funding we do for the ports is so directly measurable in economic impact, and I just cite the Port of Winona a few years ago when we did a minor change to the infrastructure in the ports in Winona, and the next year they were able to double the tonnage through that port. I mean, that's the impact of a little bit of our infrastructure investment in economic development in these areas. And to take economic development money and solve another problem strikes me as sort of penny wise and pound foolish, because the very thing that's going to build our tax base to enable us to do to deal with our other obligations is seems to me counterproductive. So I would speak strongly. I unfortunately, probably none of the, I don't know if any of the ports people came to this room, whether they knew about this amendment, but there is a huge backlog in infrastructure and ports, and I would just be clog in infrastructure and ports, and I would just be very sorry to see this happen.
Representative Hornstein.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And as I recall, last year we, I think it was an initiative from Representative Lohmer, if I am not mistaken, to actually, I think we increased the Trooper Academy by $5 million. And so now we have another $2.5 million. And I, you know, again, not having heard this bill and not, or not having heard from the Department of Public Safety, you know, in terms of how we spent that $5 million already, do we need this? I think it's really important to support the Trooper Academy, but again, we're doing this with another shift, so we might be up to represent to 49 or 50 now, Representative Atkins, with this amendment. I'm concerned because we just added $5 million last year, and so coming on the heels of that, I'm not sure why we need to do this at this time. And certainly, coming from the Port Development Fund, as Representative Hausman articulated, is problematic.
Representative Hausman.
And Mr. Chair, I used Winona. I should have used Red Wing. we're taking money from the chairs, city. I mean, what's happening down there is amazing. The city of Red Wing has a vision for how they are going to be transformed. And so this amendment takes money from the Port of Red Wing. I feel even more strongly about this now.
Representative Powell. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And could Mr. Lee kind of remind us what we spent in bonding last year? $2 million for is what the Chair Hausman was is saying. So how much is that, an increase or a decrease from what we're putting in?
Mr. Chair and members, in the Omnibus Capital Investment Bill, there's a $2 million appropriation for port development assistance. The DE2 amendment, as currently drafted, would be $5 million in general in vehicle services fund money for that.
Thank you. So we're more than doubling putting money into the port. So I think we're doing more than what we did last year, and I think it's and I think that's well enough.
Representative Hausman.
And Mr. Chair, that was a painful cut last year, because actually what the ports requested was $10 million, and we know the magnitude of some of the issues. Just looking at the size of what's happening in Duluth, international shipping. So their request was $10 million. We gave them $2 million. That's an underfunding.
Thank you. Any other comments, members? Representative Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is my comment is that this affects greater Minnesota. There's a lot of grain that moves through those ports, and soybeans in particular, and there's interest in the soybeans, moving soybeans out of the Port of Duluth, and that expands our markets, and there's efforts to expand the markets beyond moving west. And both the river and the Port of Duluth offer opportunities to move to Europe and to other areas of the world. This is an important issue, so the port development is critical for agriculture, and therefore I do not support this amendment.
Thank you. Seeing no further questions, Representative Lucero moves the, I'm sorry, I lost it, A35 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay?
No.
No. Motion prevails. A35 amendment is...
Division
is called for, and the on the question of moving the 835 amendment, all those in favor raise their hands.
Never left.
Opposed? Raise your hand. Okay. The amendment passes 11-9. Representative Drazkowski, the A27 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. The A27 amendment is not in front of me, but I can talk about it. I'm not going to offer the amendment, but just wanted to talk about it briefly. I have been told by some county engineers that if we can find a way to avoid some of the thank you. If we can avoid some of the engineering standards and other mandates within MnDOT for some of these county dollars that flow through them, we can maximize the use of those dollars on the ground by our local governments and building their local roads and bridges. And so that was the intent of this amendment. And Mr. Chair and members, I don't know if we want to have a discussion on it. We certainly can. But I would hope that we can figure out how to squeeze as much juice out of this grape as we can going forward so that we can bring the best yield, again, for our taxpayer dollars to the people of Minnesota as we work to provide the best decisions that we can. So hope we can have this discussion throughout maybe this session as well as early next year as well.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. I appreciate that. We've had a lot of conversation in regards to a number of different
policy moves and items that we want to look at on both sides, and that is kind of a good segue into Representative Bernardi's amendments that she'll talk to. And unfortunately, sometimes we run out of time with the task at hand, and I think there's a number of issues that we need to research and have that discussion, and I look forward to having that. Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did you want to move those amendments? Is that what? No, I'm sorry. You thought I was going to talk.
We can.
Yeah, we're going to wait.
That is your prerogative.
Are you ready to?
I am ready.
Is that what you're moving to right now? I was just anticipating what you're moving to, Mr. Chair.
One moment.
Okay.
Representative Martin.
Mr. Chair, just procedurally, I'm confused. Are we withdrawing this then? It sounds like that's what's happening, or have I misunderstood?
I'm sorry. That we never moved that amendment.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the clarification. Representative Bernardi, to your amendment.
Okay, so I believe that, would you like me to talk to the amendment first, or would you like me to move the amendment, Mr. Chair?
Whatever your choice is, we can move the amendment.
Okay.
We can move the 815-0416.
Okay, yeah, whatever. I'll just talk to all of them at the same time as we discuss.
Okay.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank my colleagues for working on this legislation with me as on both sides of the aisle. I appreciate it. Representative Kelly and I have been in extensive conversations about this. And this amendment brings together a really important piece that needs to be passed along with more funding for MnDOT. I strongly believe that there is more funding needed to maintain and modernize and build a transportation system that truly is multimodal and it meets the needs of all Minnesotans. With that, we also need to make sure that we are being very good stewards of our dollar. And if you can call it stability, sustainability, stewardship, whatever you want to call this, it's important that we make sure that every one of our dollars are being invested very wisely. And just like with a car, you need to get tune-ups every once in a while so that you're performing to your best. In this amendment, what I'll talk to today about briefly, hopefully, is focusing on performance measures as well as looking at are doing an audit and review of MnDOT in the sense to make sure that we're being as effective and innovative as possible and coming up with recommendations on how to do that. You know, as I said, it's important that we're serving the Minnesotans and we're serving people, and we need to be sure that we're not serving a culture of an organization or just the history of an organization. We need to be moving forward and making sure that we're moving layers that are no longer necessary, getting decisions closer to the people so that our projects are really being implemented that meets the needs of Minnesota as well as the needs of communities. The one part of the legislation I'm going to mention talks about performance measures, and it focuses on three very important things. And I do have something to pass out, so as I talk, I'm going to pass this out if our pages can do that. There's two sheets I have here. One is of a map, and one is some information about potholes. And I'll briefly just mention about potholes. There's now information online you can go find out to actually figure out how to avoid potholes so that you don't damage your car. And it says, like, drive on well-lit roads. I don't have it right in front of me because I think I passed them all out. Drive on well-lit roads. Drive on roads that you know so that you're familiar with them. And I can't remember the other tips, but, you know, make sure you read that closely because the average Minnesotan's been reported that spends about $250 a year on fixing their cars due to potholes. And then you can also look on the best way to cover your potholes, whether you should do a claim, not do a claim. If you don't have collision, you can't do a claim. If you do, then your insurance might go up. I mean, this is costing Minnesotans lots of money. So that leads me into talking about how we need to be sure that we're really focusing on a quality road system that's going to last for a long time for Minnesota. In that map that I sent out, which we haven't got done here yet, it has two maps on it. One is the first one that has lots of green on it, is the pavement quality index that MnDOT uses to measure their pavement quality. And you can see getting a pretty good grade on there and meeting those performance measures. It's lots of green. When you look at the other map, if you look at the remaining service of life, and we've been hearing a lot about this, we need to make sure that our roads are quality roads and they're going to last a long time, you'll find that it's no longer green. There is a lot of yellow, which is difficult to see, and there's a lot of red. And that would be a performance measure that would really create transparency and into where we really are with our infrastructure. So my bill focuses on, I should say ours, because this has been a collaborative effort, but the amendment does three important things. It requires greater accountability for MnDOT, and it provides greater transparency to the public and their elected representatives. It treats all the trunk highways with the same concern for quality that feds are requiring for the federal highways. Map 21 is placing an emphasis on performance measures of the national highway system, and we ought to be doing the same as we appropriate more money for our transportation system. And then this is an important part of this bill is that a licensed engineer will sign this performance plan. We do that on our bridge and road projects, that we have a licensed engineer sign those, and they're accountable to keeping their license and to the other engineers. And so that's an important part of this bill. So I'm not going to go into all the details of it, but it would align with the goals of our state, align with our federal and state law requirements, and making sure that we're meeting a lot of these things. I'm pulling out these two sections to talk to you about my original bill, because it seems we can get closer to common ground with MnDOT on these two for now, but we're going to work before the floor session when this vote comes up, and then also it possibly could move in the summer to make it more comprehensive. And I just want to mention the other one is an audit, and I actually got a letter from MnDOT that said that they support that effort, and that would be to look at the effectiveness of MnDOT and the innovation of MnDOT, and to have the Carlson School of Management, Humphrey Institute, the Center for Transportation Studies, and also the University of Wisconsin Transportation Department that they have there that does a lot of work, and to really look at how MnDOT is functioning across their divisions, across their offices, across their departments, and making sure that we are being as efficient and effective as possible, and we're creating the transportation system that will meet the needs of Minnesotans now and the 21st century. I think our commissioner is doing an outstanding job with his leadership, and anything we can, and our employees at MnDOT do great work, and whatever we can do to help create a culture that supports effectiveness, efficiency, and innovation will serve the people of Minnesota and will create the kind of transportation we need now and in the future. So with that, Mr. Chair, I look forward to our continued work together, and with all of our colleagues here, this is one area where we can find common ground and bring people together to restore confidence in Minnesota, and that we can move forward together on legislation that really helps people in Minnesota. And with that, I'm going to, for now, withdraw those amendments.
Thank you, Representative Bernardi, and I do applaud your efforts, and I know you've reached out to many of us, and we look forward to it, and I would state that we will absolutely be having hearings on your amendments, your bill, as you put it together, and I look forward to that. You've certainly already done a lot of work, and appreciate your efforts on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, that is the list of our amendments that are going to be offered today. Move the bill. At this point in time, I will move House File 4 as amended to be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And certainly ask for questions. Representative Hornstein.
Well, Mr. Chair, just before we proceed to a vote, and I'd like to have a roll call on the bill as amended. I wanted to thank you, Mr. Chair, for running a good committee and always being open to you know, ideas procedurally and otherwise from the minority. Really appreciate that a lot. Your staff has been fantastic to work with as well. So really wanted to thank you from us to you. But unfortunately, I'm very disappointed with the bill. As I think Representative Atkins's amendment pointed out, you know, this bill is a house of cards, and it's built on a very flimsy foundation of gimmicks and shifts and cuts. It doesn't really get at, I think, a shared goal that many of us have, that a transportation bill should unite our state rather than divide it. I've spoken about One Minnesota in the past and in the conference that we attended at the beginning of the year. And a One Minnesota transportation bill doesn't cut transit. It doesn't create some divisions even in road funding, which the majority had to correct today, partially, I believe. You know, we had some issues with the CASA formula and corridors of commerce funding that even divided our state on road and bridge issues. So we do need to strive for a bill that addresses the needs of the metro, of suburbs, of greater Minnesota, that addresses all modes of transit, road and bridge funding, and this bill falls short. And it's a disappointment, and I would encourage members to vote no.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, just a couple of parts of the bill that one I'm a little confused about, and I'll probably learn more as we go along, but when I see some charts that our researcher prepared for us, the motor vehicle lease sales tax and the money from the million from the general fund specify they only go to five collar counties, and whenever it gets targeted and designated in that way, I'm wondering, did we base that on greater needs there, or why do several of the counties get left out of that formula? That is just a question I have. The great frustration I have is suburban transit held itself harmless, but is getting additional funding. And in this bill, we take from some of the least subsidized parts of our regular transit system and give it and hold harmless to the parts that are among the most heavily subsidized. It's a very bizarre kind of situation, but so one small segment of our transit system not only is held harmless but gets new money while all the cuts there have to come from the regular transit. The other one, though, is a bigger issue, and I think ultimately requires, hopefully, you and Representative Dowd and Representative Torkelson to clearly look at debt capacity, and that has to do with the bond sale authorizations in Article 2. In the big picture of the bill that the majority is proposing, there is this $1.3 billion in trunk highway bonding, but then there's an additional $1 billion in general obligation bonding. That will be a total of $2.3 billion. The way Governor Pawlenty, when he was governor, rewrote the debt service guidelines, he said, we want to quantify all debt at some point. And we've unfortunately taken on some biggies when we did the tobacco securitization bonds and when we did the Viking Stadium. And there are looming issues about debt capacity. Why should that concern us? In this case, the borrowing we're proposing, transportation already gets gas tax, license tabs, motor vehicle sales tax, property tax, sales tax, wheelage tax, federal funding, and fares. Lots of streams of funding going to transportation. But in the proposal of the House majority, they're saying, if that isn't sufficient, we're going to go to one other tool, and that is general obligation bonding. That's the only tool that all other state agencies, including ports and including higher education and including corrections and veterans, that's the only tool they have. And so when we do any borrowing and any bonding, we do as a state have to take very seriously what's going to be the impact on our debt capacity. Mr. Lee gave us a presentation in capital investment the other day, but at a certain point, I hope that all of the leaders who have any part in this sit down with Mr. Lee and say, what's going to be the impact on the debt capacity of our state 5 years down the line when all of this becomes, when all of it's online? Because if it affects the debt capacity for general obligation bonding, higher ed is hurt, veterans are hurt, corrections is hurt, all state agencies, wastewater infrastructure. And so when we do this borrowing, we just have to take very seriously the unintended consequences, and I hope that that discussion takes place at the leadership level at some point before we conclude this session.
Thank you. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just going to reiterate a point I made at the beginning, and I was very pleased when the budget kept improving throughout the year, and I thought, well, you know, maybe we can actually do a transportation bill without a gas tax. Well, I've surveyed my constituents. Actually, a plurality of them supported a gas tax, which shocked me. It still was between 30% and 40% of the folks in my district, but it was their number one choice. And I thought, well, okay, maybe we'll be able to bargain this down to a tiny little increase. And then I thought, we won't need one at all. We can use general fund. And that's what you've tried to do here. But the problem isn't just with this bond, this bill. If you had shifted some of those general fund obligations to fund transportation, but had filled those with the surplus, that would have been something that was acceptable to me. But it's not okay to then not shift the funds to fill the gap that we're taking by using this general fund money. It's not okay to do that on the backs of the kids in my school or the Social Security or the social network support network we have for our disabled and our elderly. And it's not okay to not be able to fulfill the freeze for higher education that we all talked about during our campaigns. And the sad truth of the matter is we have the funds to fund transportation and support those systems, and we're choosing not to do it in the bigger bill. So I can't support this at this time. My hope, though, is that through the process of negotiations that we will be able to not put a hole in those other divisions, to be able to increase their budget targets so that they can fund the projects that they need to fund and support the constituents that we need to support, and that maybe we can also get a transportation bill out without any taxation. So I think we have the funds to do both if we have the will to do it. And Mr. Chair, I urge you to try to find a way to do that before session's end.
Thank you. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe a couple of things that need to be improved here, and that's more dedicated funding in the true sense of the dedication by the Constitution, and that it needs to be larger. This bill needs to be larger. You only vote once every few years on a possibility increase. So if you vote for 10-cent gas tax or a 50-cent gas tax, it all takes one vote to do that, or whatever the. When you vote for a $5 million bill or an $8 million bill, it only takes that vote, and they're not going to get any madder at you whichever way you vote. So you're going to have an opportunity, probably this year, hopefully this year, to vote on a bill that needs to be pumped up a little bit. But I can see some distinct possibilities here. So I'm going to support it. So we keep it moving.
Thank you, Representative Earhart. Other questions or comments? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I thank this committee for deliberating in the way we have. I think it's, I enjoy that. And particularly, I appreciate the fact that I think there's a clear consensus in Minnesota that we need to deal with transportation. It's bipartisan. It's across the state. And hopefully we're moving there. I have several concerns. My first concern is that there's just not enough funding for corridors of commerce. We devoted more than $300 million in the last session to the corridors of commerce. There's less than that for these next 2 years in this bill. And I live near Highway 14. I live less than a mile from Highway 14. A lot of my constituents are on that road a lot, and when you live where we are, it's just a dominant issue, and so I need to see a pathway towards completion of Highway 14. The second thing is, I've talked about it several times, but you know I'm concerned about the vulnerability of the funding for transportation over time when there's deficits, and I think, again, I look backwards, I see that's a possibility moving forwards. I'm also concerned, though, about the competition in the general fund. And especially with when there's a proposed $2 billion tax cut, this we do pit road dollars against funding for schools. I'm hearing from my schools, they're not satisfied with the budget as it is, and that will just continue to grow and create an ongoing problem. But you know, we've got 6 weeks left, and I'm going to quote my neighbors in Nicollet, in one of my favorite towns in my district. Let's get the job done and let's do it right. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I really have enjoyed being on this committee. We've done a lot of, there's a lot of good things in this bill, but I'm going to be voting no just because I'm really concerned about the stability of the overall funding at this point.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions from or comments from members, I will echo the sentiments of Representative Hornstein and many others. I absolutely appreciate the work that's been done in this committee. We will be having some other committee meetings that we need to meet for on some other issues. So we'll save the accolades for everyone. But I do appreciate the manner in which we conducted our business here. And I also certainly the staff that we have around this table, all staff, certainly appreciate all of their efforts during these times. Things get pressed, and we ask a lot of you. So thank you all for your work there. With that, I am very proud of the work we've done in regards to this bill. As I said before, our chore was to I believe elevate transportation to the level that we need to really take some hard looks at the priorities that we've set. And if we look down through the budget and the targets that have been set out, I understand people's desire to call these, you know, cuts or to take dollars away from other entities. But the fact of the matter is that if we look at the targets, the real dollars that are going into, whether it's health and human services or education, which seems to be the hot topics, are not reductions. They may not be the increases that everyone wants, but at certain times we have that task in front of us to prioritize. And what we were told by the majority of our constituents is that transportation was indeed a priority this time around. So with that, and in regards to the wonderful position that we're in regards to a surplus, we've managed to put a bill together that does have the dedicated funding in place to make this not only a two-year plan, a four-year plan, but we looked out into the future of 10 years. And so I appreciate all of the efforts, and I appreciate the debate, and we still have a ways to go before this is finalized, and I look forward to that process, and thank you for all of your work. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 4, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means, and a roll call was asked for. I'll also ask that the staff be allowed to make technical corrections to that bill as we go. All right. With that, Ms. Tacchini will take the roll.
Chair Kelly?
Yes.
Vice Chair Petersburg?
Yes.
Representative Anderson? Representative Atkins?
No.
Representative Bernardi? Representative Drazkowski?
Yes.
Representative Earhart?
Yes.
Representative Hausman?
No.
Representative Hornstein?
No.
Representative Howell?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
Nay.
Representative Kosnick?
Yes.
Representative Lucero?
Yes.
Representative Mason?
No.
Representative McNamara?
Yes.
Representative Nash?
Yes.
Representative Norton?
No.
Representative Runbeck?
Yes.
Representative Sanders?
Yes.
Representative Sundin?
No.
Representative Uglem?
Yes.
Representative Whalen?
Yes.
There being 13 ayes and 8 nays, that motion is approved, and House File 4, as amended, will be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Members, we do have a number of requests for bills that were certain projects. We did say that we would hear those, and we will hear those, so we will schedule a number of committee meetings. What we will be doing is we will most likely be limiting those to probably 5 minutes per project. I think we have somewhere along the list of 50 or 60 of those. So we will make that offer available to all of those representatives who have put in bills. So, Representative,
thank you, Mr.
Hornstein.
Chair. Do you anticipate hearing some policy bills, but for hearing purposes only, informational hearings beyond these other financing bills?
Representative Hornstein,
related.
We haven't had any at this point in time requested, but certainly would leave that open.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Thank you, members. With that, this meeting is adjourned.